even in the quietest moments, I wish I knew what I had to do. And even though the sun is shining, well, I feel the rain. Here it comes again, dear. And even when you showed me my heart was out of tune, well, there's a shadow of doubt that's not letting me find you too soon. The music that you gave me, the language of my soul, Lord, I want to be with you. Won't you let me come in from the cold? Even though the stars are listening and the ocean's deep, I just go to sleep. And then I create the silent movie, you become the star. Is that what you are, dear? Your whisper tells a secret, your laughter brings me joy, and a wonder of feeling and nature's own little boy. But still the tears keep falling, they're raining from the sky. Well, there's a ladder we got to go under before I get high.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, May 11th, 2015. And we're broadcasting live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern Standard to midnight. If you're listening live over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can call in at 605-562-3140. That's 605-562-3140, participant code 385-698. That's 385-698. Hosts have to mute up in here. We're getting sounds feedback. Okay, all radio hosts are invited into the queue if they have any questions or a comment. If anyone would like to email a question, send questions to questions, plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. That's questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners, of which the proceeds support the National Liberty Alliance effort. We have New Manna Food, long-term storage food for emergencies, and we also have East End Rare Coins, Colloidal Silver Maker, Silver Lung, and also we have a Survival Seed Vault. And I think we found some of the best prices on the market for all these items. Anyway, all of the proceeds go to support NLA's efforts. For more information on any of these products, you can go to the right-hand side of our website. On the right side, you'll see some links to these different products. Also support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right side. Okay, now let's take a look into God's Word. Tonight's scripture is Proverbs chapter 5. We're going to read verses 1 through 14. And this is a warning against immorality. My son, attend unto my wisdom, and bow thine ear to my understanding, that thou mayest regard discretion, and that thy lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil, but her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps take hold on hell. Lest thou shouldest ponder the path of life, her ways are movable, that thou kennest not know them. Hear me thou, therefore, O ye children, and depart not from the words of my mouth. Remove thy way far from her, and come not nigh to the door of her house. Lest thou give thine honor unto others, and thy years unto the cruel. Lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger. And thou mourn at the last when thy flesh and thy body are consumed. And say, how have I hated instruction, and my heart despised reproof, and have not obeyed the voice of my teacher, nor inclined mine ear to that them that instruct me. I was almost in all evil in the midst of the congregation and assembly. Okay, that was Proverbs chapter 5, verses 1 through 14. Tonight's topic is we're going to be returning back to habeas corpus. This is part 2. Last week we read a petition for habeas corpus, which actually was filed, and also the show cause that came forth from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, commanding and demanding to the recipients of that petition, to the recipients, to answer and show cause. We did file that Tuesday morning it was actually filed. It was served. They had Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. They had till 5 o'clock Friday afternoon to respond, exactly 3 days, and that's the process. And like usual with this kind of writ, they never answer. So they did default, and we did write default papers. They were mailed out on Saturday. They should have them probably tomorrow, and we should expect them to respond before the end of the week. By the way, we have some open mics out there that we're getting feedback on. So the hosts, all your mics are open. Either mute yourself from your end or come into the onto the panel here and mute yourself here so that we don't get the background noise of the feedback. Okay, so these are the papers we're going to read tonight. They are up on our webpage, nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on Media on the blue bar. It's the second tab over from the left, going to the right. And come down and you'll see habeas corpus filings. You'll see the two papers we filed last week and the two papers that were filed this weekend. And again, they should probably have them tomorrow. The interesting thing about habeas corpus is it's an old writ. It's been around for quite some time. It is remarked on as being the greatest writ known to man, a great achievement. As a matter of fact, it's being referred to as much. It's marveled by many as they also marvel concerning the grand jury and the trial jury. The power and the authority of it. And all writs, particularly writ of quo warranto, is very specific. There is a judicial process and procedure that has never been broken, ever been broken. Let me repeat that. So I've done it once before. It was successful. I recently heard from someone else that they did one not long ago, and it was successful. And we expect this one to be successful. If these people break the law, and that's exactly what they would be doing, then we will quote the law to that sheriff or that marshal that is required in that area to go and make an arrest. And we will do we'll bring it before the grand jury, and we will bring a presentment against the judge and all of the participants involved. But we'll see what happens. Like I said, I've heard Bill Thornton had done this numerous times, and I understand it's been successful with him. But history recalls it's always successful. The problem is we're dealing with corrupt courts, and of course they may try to do something, different. But again, it's a process and procedure. They would have to stop the process. They would have to stop the procedure. They'd have to break the law, and they know they do. And I don't think they're willing to do that. But we're going to see very soon anyway. Okay, let's look into the two papers we filed. And one other thing, when we do these writs of habeas corpus, we're doing it from a very, very powerful position. Most people, when they go for a writ of habeas corpus, they bring it to the judge and they ask for a habeas corpus, and he has to approve it or disapprove it. And he will always disapprove it. Always. I've heard of this many times, and habeas corpus are never approved. I've heard of even lawyers trying to do habeas corpuses, which they're not really allowed to. So they get in trouble for doing it. But those that I've heard that have tried to do it, they didn't get through either. Why? Because it was up to the discretion of the judge. And the judge has the discretion to see if it's called for. And he may look at the paperwork and say, hey, it's ain't called for. No, you can't have it. So they don't get a habeas corpus. We do it from a very unique position. I know Bill Thornton has taught to do it from the position of to yourself and responding back to yourself as your own court. And that's a good way to do it. Matter of fact, that's how I did it the first time I did it. And it did work very well that time. But we are doing it from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, when we read the papers last week, the petition was directed to the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. It was not directed to the judge. And, of course, we responded, and we granted the writ of habeas corpus and let the papers go forward, and we did it under seal. And we haven't heard a peep from it, which is usual. That's what happened last time I did it. There was no peep. They waited the full 5 days after the 3 days before releasing this guy, and they did release him before the end of the fifth day. So we're going to see what happens. But anyway, we're doing it from the perspective of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. It is posted up there as such. Nobody but any of the state grand juries, the Unified State Common Law Grand Juries can do this. And as a matter of fact, the Unified... any Dutchess or Orange or whatever county you're from, grand jury can do this. So the Dutchess County, that's the county I live, they could do it. Grand jury, they can receive the request from an individual and acknowledge the request and put forth the show cause that now they have to show cause for. And because the jury has stepped in, that's the true tribunal. The judge can't do anything, and that's what makes this one so powerful. So there's nothing really they could do except for follow procedure. If they don't follow procedure and process, judicial process, then they break the law. And there are codes that talk about this very specifically. We're going to read about a default judgment code particularly, and others. But when people write these things, if you want to write it on your own, I strongly suggest that you go to the grand juries to have it done. To do one on your own, you really better do your homework on this and be very careful. You're going to have your own seal. I have my own seal, and I used my seal when I had did it a while back. And you really have to do your homework. Now, we're trying to teach people this. We're trying to teach people the right way. And we've mentioned this numerous times, and I'm going to mention it again. There is huge amounts of poison out there. People who think they got things figured out from the common law perspective, and they look at things and they look at the fiction and they give merit to the fiction by acknowledging the fiction, by arguing with the fiction, by trying to stay within the framework of the fiction. Well, as soon as you do that, you're lost because you've just given fiction reality. Why give fiction any reality? This must be done from the perspective without giving fiction any merit and any reality. They're frauds, they're crooks, they're criminals. Don't give them any acknowledgement of any kind of reality. So that's key. And this is a major problem. I get email all the time, oh, what we're doing is very good, but you failed. You didn't get your standing. You didn't say it this way. You didn't do it that way. They're bringing all the poison that I've already been cleansed out for me through research. And all they're doing is giving them, again, acknowledgement of existence. And by that, you're also giving them jurisdiction. We deny it all because they don't have it. It's a fraud. It's not reality. It's a fiction. It's a fantasy, and we're not going to permit it. So that's one of the major problems we have out there. People need to do the research. You can follow our work, and we give all the research that we've used to accomplish whatever we're doing. We give it all. You find it in footnotes. You find it in our studies and throughout the website. We give it all out there. So do it the right way. Do it the common law way. Give these criminals no acknowledgement of anything but the fact that they're criminals. Now, from the other perspective, people doing this from the state grand juries, I'd love to see this going by. I'd love to see each state starting to step up and start to do these writs for people in their state as we're moving closer to getting into the courts. Because, again, this gives us more merit and power and authority when these things work and we start freeing people from prison. And it also puts fear to these people because they recognize we've discovered something that they didn't want us to discover. And very few lawyers know habeas corpus and really even how to put forward a habeas corpus, although they do use habeas corpuses to remove people from one jurisdiction to another. For instance, we saw in a case recently, as a matter of fact, this case here, where the individual was transferred from a county jail to a federal holding for the purpose of going into the courts. And in order to remove him from that jurisdiction, which was the state who was holding him on behalf of the feds, they had to do a habeas corpus, which was a command to release the body to the marshal, and the marshal brought them before the judge. And then after everything was done, then they returned them back to the prison. And I presume every time they have to remove them from a prison outside of the jurisdiction that they're being held in, in other words, feds holding people in state prisons, or shall I say county prisons, they have to do a habeas corpus, I believe, every time. I'm presumptuous on that. I'm not sure on that. Since they had to do it the first time, I guess they got to do it every time they go collect a prisoner. So they have got some experience with habeas corpus. They do kind of have some knowledge of it, at least on a federal level. But generally speaking, lawyers avoid them. They're taught in school not to use them. they're taught in school, in a bar school, not to use the Constitution, as a matter of fact. And that's a fact. I know because I was taught by a lawyer and do the process and procedures of the courts. And one of the things he stressed is don't use the Constitution. You're only causing problems in the court. You're confusing things, and you're going to try to interpret it. Look, use codes. You know, yeah, okay, right, we'll use codes. But anyway, that's how they think. And of course, the bar is really the enemy. They're the ones who have been writing all these codes, or people behind the bar. And they're controlling all these lawyers and judges to maintain the control over the judicial process that they have right now. Okay, so any state that would like to do this, and again, we're looking to really get some serious, authority, or not authority, but leadership in each state. We need serious leaderships. We have good leaders throughout the nation, but we don't have enough. And there's a lot of states that do not have a serious leadership group. We need 1, 2, 3, 4 or more individuals in every state who will step up and really learn this stuff. And then they will take the lead in their step to teach all of the grand jury administrators within their state. I mean, you're going to have, for instance, New York has 62 counties, so we have 62 administrations, 4 people in each county to make up that administration for the purpose of bringing forth the grand juries and the trial juries and to bring them through orientation and prepare them to hear a case. So they need someone in all these counties. Now, someone in the state that's getting in head of this kind of writings and paperwork, they will then be advisory to the people in the counties until they can learn how to do it. So they will need someone, and, you know, they can come to us, of course, but we'd like to train people in every state so that they can train people in their own state. So anybody interested that really wants to take a serious leadership role in your state and really learn these things and to teach these to others when the time comes up and to be the people that that will really kind of bring the state along. You know, we also were about ready, I think, in the next 30 days. We got some very interesting announcements to make in a little while, and those announcements is going to make my point. We are about ready to break open, and we're about ready to be flooded very, very soon. And when that happens, we have to have that leadership in place. We have to hold forth the principles that we've been teaching here for 2 years, and it's very simple. Sense of honor, sense of justice, a sense of mercy. And everything you think, do, and say in what we are doing, you need to have those three principles forward in your mind. And we have to remind each other as we work together of these principles, because only then are we going to be successful. Otherwise, we will become them, because that's the nature of mankind. So we will just become them again. So we will have people flooding in trying to take power and authority, and they're going to have revenge and anger on their mind. And it's not going to go well if that's what happens. So we need to develop a greater leadership across the nation than what we already have, and really start teaching people these things like habeas corpus and the writ of mandamus and also other procedures and processes. There's not that much. It's not going to be all that difficult. But nevertheless, there is some paperwork to be written, how to write an indictment, how to write the presentment, which is pretty much the same as an indictment, just got a different label, that's all. But they're both the same. And what we need to do and what we can do, because we can do a lot. I mean, really, really a lot. And all of it has got to be for the benefit of the people. All of it has got to be in order to bring the people up and bring these servants back into submission. That's what we have to be doing. So we want to write these papers correctly, and so we're encouraging people to come and learn. And in that process of learning, once you go forward to do it on your own, you know, you will need to watch your work, check your work, make sure the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted and all that other stuff until we feel comfortable that you got it. And that's a duty that we feel very totally required that we must maintain. So, again, anybody who wants to take that kind of a leadership role, get in touch with Jen or Robert, national leaders. Go out, click on the directory, and get a hold of someone on the national end, and let them know, hey, I want to be, I want to work with on the state level, and learn these things, and work with everyone else, the other states, to do the things we have to do. And believe me, we have a lot of things to do, and we have to do it quickly. Over the next, 45 to 60 days. Okay, we're going to talk about some of the things on why I just said some of the things I just said as far as, things are about ready to break open. But first, let's go through these. The next paper after the last two papers that we filed, actually we filed these two pages, there's two papers to file. One is one page, and the other one is 11 pages. Okay, the first one is called the default judgment. It's just a single page letting them know you guys defaulted and filing it with the court to let the court know there's been a default here and a process. And then the second one is what's called the memorandum of decision, which makes clear what everyone now has to do. Okay, one of them, of course, is release the prisoner immediately. And so we've already sent a paper to the marshal to command him to release the prisoner immediately. All right, so the first paper, again, you can find a copy of this up at nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on Media and scroll down to Habeas Corpus Filings, and you'll see there's four papers. The paper we're going to read last week, we read Petition and the Writ of Habeas Corpus Show Cause. Tonight, first paper we're going to read is the Habeas Corpus Default, okay? And by the way, there is a difference, not much, but there is a slight difference on writing a habeas corpus, whether it's going to the federal court to release a prisoner that's being held by the federal government, or going to a state court. The procedure is a little different, and people need to learn the difference. The city, the town, and the other courts, village courts, or whatever other courts might be out there, it's the same as doing it with the state. But nevertheless, there is a little bit of a difference, and you got to keep aware of this when you write these papers. And again, we have it all frameworked out. You really just have to pull out the facts from one case and put in the facts of another case. And we do have a red letter paper, which we will be sharing with those who are learning, which that's where you have to fill in the blank, so to speak, put in the very specific information for the other case. The whole thing is about jurisdiction, because that's what's really being challenged. They don't have it, and they can't have it, and they can't prove that they have it, so they can't do nothing. But anyway, default judgment. default judgment, quorum is pro regi. I believe that means by the king himself, in other words, the king's bench. And this is according to Rule 55, Federal Rule 55, and Rule 58, and 28 U.S. Code 28-2243. So these are all in their codes. It's proper to use the rules and the codes for this. There's nothing wrong with using the rules of the court as long as they're not repugnant, because after all, we're using these rules of the court and also these codes because they were written to let the servants know, don't break the law. This is the law. This is what you got to do. This is the way it works. You can't stop this. And that's U.S. Code 20, U.S.C. 28-2243. Okay, Rule 55, default or default judgment, entering a default. When a party against whom a judgment for affirmative relief is sought has failed to plead or otherwise defend, and that failure is shown by affidavit or otherwise under seal, the clerk must enter the party's default. Period. That's the law. It's the law. And as a matter of fact, this is, of course, the law and the rules they use in their own courts. And it was originally written on, from us. We, the people, ultimately gave the authority to the legislators to write this kind of a thing. And it's that simple. That's the command. Break it, and you break the law. Okay? Clerk must give party the default. It doesn't even require anything from the judge. Completely passes by the judge. Judge is irrelevant in this. Okay, the respondent against whom a judgment for affirmative relief is sought have failed to plead or otherwise defend as provided by these rules, and that fact is made to appear by affidavit now. Therefore, this court of record issues this default judgment quorum ispo regi to dispose of the matter as the law and justice require, to wit. It is ordered and adjudged that petitioner be released from custody immediately, and the respondent, namely the United States District Court for the District of Utah, Special Assistant U.S. Attorney Daniel R. Strong, FBI Agent S.A. Jewel Arlsterson, U.S. Marshal James A. Thompson, and Magistrate Judge Dustin P. B. Peed, shall abate at the law all proceedings in the relating to the United States District Court for the District of Utah case number, and we give the case number, no damages, costs, or attorney's fees are rewarded. And then it's dated, the court, under seal. Under seal is as good as an affidavit. That is it. The seal gives it the authority, period, along with the signature. So this paper, once filed with the clerk must then file it, and it now becomes a default judgment. And this is served on all parties, and it was by U.S. mail on Saturday morning or afternoon. And again, like I said, they should all have it tomorrow. Now, another paper that was filed with this at the same time in the same envelope went into the court and also filed and given a copy to all of the recipients, so those who were supposed to respond, is called a decision and memorandum. Gets into the details, why, when, how, and so on. And this is also the same thing with the same rules, the default judgment, and it mentions, of course, all the respondents and the petitioner and so on. And it starts off, and again, like I said, you can get a copy up on our website under media. Comes now the above-entitled court of record to review the record, summarily determine the facts, and dispose of the matter as law and justice requires. Habeas corpus has been called the great writ of liberty. Remember, everything we do, okay, we explain ourselves what we're doing, why we're doing it, by what authority we're doing it, and we're doing it with the mostly, we put a lot of stuff into this to educate. Everything we do, also, the most important thing is to educate the reader, whether it's the clerk, whether it's the judge, whether it's the lawyers, or whether it's the people, whoever it is. Okay, we do it to educate. So everything is explained, and that's how this thing flows, 11 pages of it. Okay, let me start. The habeas corpus has been called the great writ of liberty. Historically, that is a side issue. In the early days of habeas corpus, was not connected with the idea of liberty. It was a useful device in the struggle for control between common law and equity courts. By the middle of the 15th century, the issue of habeas corpus, together with privilege, was a well-established way to remove a cause from an inferior court where a defendant could show some special connection with one of the central courts, which entitled him to have his case tried there. In the early, and of course, if there is no law against it in a common law court, you know, then you remove them from the lower court, the inferior court, to your court for the purpose of releasing them. And that's the purpose of habeas corpus, which entitled him to have his case tried there. In the early 17th century, the Five Knights case involved the clash between the Stout claims of prerogative and the common law, and was, in the words of one of the judges, the greatest case that I ever knew in this court. Over the centuries, the wit became a viable bulwark between the powers of government and the rights of the people in both England and the United States. And by the way, you know, on these papers, again, there's we fill these papers with footnotes. And after you read through the paper, you should go back and read through the paper with the footnotes. And this is where your real education comes from. Then we give a contents page, which we list the different contents in here. Summary, jurisdiction of the court, exhaustion of of administrative procedure, commodity, petition, finding of facts, conclusion of law, and conclusion summary. So first, the summary. Oliver Wendell Holmes once wrote, "I long have said there is no such thing as a hard case. I am frightened weakly. But always, when you walk up to the lion and lay hold of the hide comes off, and the same old donkey of a question of law is underneath. Duty falls upon this court of record to lay hold of the lion, unhide the underlying question of law, and dispose of the matter as the law and justice require." On April 28, 2015, Stephen Dean, a people of the United States, filed in the above-entitled court of record a petition for writ of habeas corpus by a people in the United States custody. The petition invited this court inquiry into the following: the cause of the restraint, the judicial, the jurisdictional basis of the restraint, prosecutorial vindictiveness, reasonable apprehension of restraint of liberty, strict compliance with statutory requirements, and diminishments of rights. The petition issued of both facts and law. It did not appear from the application that the appellant was not entitled thereto. Therefore, this court orders the respondents to show cause why the writ should not be granted. Ordered, past tense. Explicit returns instructions were included as part of the order to show cause to enable the respondents to fulfill the order. All respondents were duly served with the petition and order to show cause. The record shows that no respondent made any returns, no respondent requested more time to answer, and no respondent provided any objection to the proceedings. Analysis 2, jurisdiction of this court. It is the duty of any court to determine whether it has jurisdiction, even though that question is not raised, in order for the exercise of jurisdiction to constitute a binding decision that the court has jurisdiction, this court has jurisdiction, we fulfill the duty by examining the sovereign power creating the court. But first, what is a court? It is the person and suit of the sovereign, the place where the sovereign sojourns with his regal retinue, wherever that may be. Further, a court is an agency of the sovereign, created by it directly or indirectly under its authority, consisting of one or more offices established and maintained for the purpose of hearing and determining issues of law and facts regarding legal rights and alleged violations thereof, and of applying the sanctions of the law authorized to exercise its power in the course of law at times and places previously determined by lawful authority. The source of the authority is acknowledged by the preamble of the Constitution for the United States of America. The people of the United States, acting in the sovereign capacity, ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. The Constitution contains nothing that would diminish the sovereign power of the people, and no state may presume to do so. Further, the United States of America and each member state is a republic, which means that the people may act either directly or through their representatives. Here, the sovereign people is acting directly. Beyond ordaining and establishing the Constitution, what are the powers of the people? The people retain all powers to self-determine and exercise rights. The essence of the people's sovereignty distills to this: the decree of the sovereign makes the law. Some have argued that the people have relinquished sovereignty through various contractual devices in which rights were not expressly reserved. However, that cannot hold because rights are inalienable. The people retain all rights of sovereignty at all times. The exercise of the sovereignty by the people is further clarified when one considers that the constitutional government agencies have no genuine sovereign power of their own, but must rely upon such authority as is granted by the people. In the petitioner identifies himself as a people of the United States. As such, he decrees the law for this court and ultimately for this court as a court of record. This, then, is the sovereign power by which this court is created. The Constitution for the United States of America mandates that the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under the Constitution, this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and the treaties made of which shall be made under their authority. This is case in law, i.e., proceeding according to the common law in a court of record. This case arises under the Constitution and the laws of the United States. It follows that the judicial power of the people of the United States shall extend to all cases thereof. It is the grand jury as arbiter that shall be the enforcer of the law, whereas we read, if any of our servants, civil servants, shall have transgressed against any of the people in any respect, and they shall ask us to cause that error to be amended without delay, or shall have broken some one of the articles of peace or security, and their transgression shall have been shown to four jurors of the aforesaid 25. And if those four jurors are unable to settle the transgression, they shall come to the 25, showing to the grand jury the error that which shall be enforced by the law of the land. Magna Carta, June 15th, A.D. 1215. I believe that was paragraph 61. Justice Powell, in the United States versus Calandria, stated, "The institution of the grand jury is deeply rooted in Anglo-American history. In England, the grand jury served for centuries both as the body of accusers sworn to discover the present for trial persons suspected of criminal wrongdoing, and as a protector of citizens against arbitrary and oppressive governmental actions. In this country, the founders thought the grand jury so essential to basic liberties that they provided in the Fifth Amendment that federal prosecutions for serious crimes only be instituted by a presentment or an indictment of a grand jury." A serious crime is any crime that requires incarceration, by the way. Let's see. The grand jury's historic function survives to this day. Its responsibility continues to include both the determination whether there is probable cause to believe a crime has been committed and the protection of citizens against unfounded criminal prosecutions. Brandsburg versus Hayes. 3. Exhaustion of administrative procedure. Originally, exhaustion of equity administrative procedure is a requirement before a court of another jurisdiction will review the proceedings of the statutory courts. This is founded upon the principles of commodity. The courts of law and the courts of equity are independent of each other. However, the two courts are not foreign to each other. They share one system of jurisprudence, which constitutes the law of the land and should be considered as courts of the same country, having jurisdiction partly different and partly concurrent. And as a matter of commodity, one of such courts will not ordinarily determine a controversy of which another of such courts has previously ordained jurisdiction. In cases of apparent conflicts between equity and at-law jurisdiction, the de jure courts are the exclusive judges over their jurisdiction in the matter. But intervention is only proper to correct errors of constitutional dimension, which occurs when an equity court arbitrarily or discriminatorily applies statutes. The rule of commodity does not go to the extent of relieving equity courts from the duty of proceeding promptly to enforce rights asserted under the federal Constitution, and all considerations of commodity must give way to the duty of the court of law to accord a people of the United States his rights to invoke the court's power and process in the defense of or enforcement of his rights. As to the principle of exhaustion of administrative remedies, the petitioner is not founding the petition on the principle as embodied in 28 U.S.C. 2254. The basis is addressed further below. However, we will address it again here. In Fiske versus Collins, the court review was that exhaustion was not a rigid and inflexible rule, but could be deviated from in special circumstances. In addition to the class of special circumstances developed in the early history of exhaustion rule, exhaustion was not required where procedural obstacles made theoretically available processes unavailable. Where the available administrative procedure does not offer swift vindication of the petitioner's right, and where a vindication of the federal right requires immediate action. Exhaustion today is a rule rooted in the relationship between the two judicial systems. The rule is consistent with the writ's extraordinary character, but it must be balanced by another characteristic of the writ, to wit, its object of providing a swift and imperative remedy in all cases of illegal restraints upon personal liberty. That is it. It is not a rule defining power, but one which relates to the appropriate exercise of power. The court noted that where resort to administrative remedies has failed to afford a full and fair adjudication of the federal contentions raised, either because the court affords no remedy or because in the particular case the remedy afforded by statutes approved in practice unavailable or seriously inadequate, a court of record should entertain a petition for habeas corpus. Otherwise, a petitioner would be remedialessness in such a case. The applicant should proceed in the federal district court of record. 28 U.S.C. 2243 provides as follows. Issuance of writ, return hearing, decisions. A court justice or judge entertaining an application for writ of habeas corpus shall forthwith award the writ or issue an order directing the respondent to show cause why the writ should not be granted, unless it appears from the application that the applicant or person detained is not entitled thereunto. And that's where we run into problems, because the judges will always say they're not entitled. They'll deny it. They always deny it. The writ or order to show cause shall be directed to the person having custody of the person detained. It shall be returned within 3 days, unless for good cause additional time not exceeding 20 days is allowed. The statutory court has been duly served, and the said court has not made apparently cares not to make a return. This question of timeliness constitutes a special circumstance justifying deviation from the exhaustion rule. Exhaustion is not required where procedural obstacles make theoretically available processes unavailable. Where the available statutory procedure does not offer swift vindication of the petitioner's rights, and where vindication of the federal right requires immediate action. Until the case is resolved in the district court, the petitioner will be unable to present his claims to the statutory court. This delay and lack of timeliness is a further special circumstance. In the interim, the petitioner would be required to lose his liberty because of a lack of swift statutory vindication of his rights. Commodity. Four.
Comity.
No, I think it's commodity. Is it? Comity.
It's comity.
Comity. Okay.
Comity.
All right, I'll have to check that in the dictionary, but I'll call it comity. Comity?
Comity. I just had them say it 10 times to me on Google, on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
Comity.
Okay. Comity is one court giving full faith and credit to the judicial proceedings of another court, provided that such proceedings do not violate its own rules. through comedy is not, though comedy is not mandated, it is encouraged by Article 4, Section 1 of the United States Constitution. However, comedy does not mean that one court involuntarily gives up its jurisdiction to another court. Comedy does not mean that one court must respect the improprieties of another court. Comedy does not mean that one court must submit to the whim of another court. Further, comedy cannot enter the equation and the question before the court concerns which of the two courts has jurisdiction regarding the vindication of the rights of the petitioner. The protection of the petitioner's rights from encroachment by the equity court is the innate responsibility of the federal courts. In the United States, habeas corpus exists in two forms, common law and statutory. The petitioner has chosen habeas corpus at common law in a court of record. The Constitution for the United States of America acknowledges the people's right to the common law of England as it was in 1789. What is that common law? It does not consist of absolute fixed and inflexible rules, but broad and comprehensive principles based on justice, reason, and common sense. The common law is also the Magna Carta, as authorized by the Confirmatio Citerorum. Do you remember how to pronounce that one? Citerorum? Carterorum? I guess you're not talking there, huh?
Cartorium.
Cartorium. Cartorium.
Yeah.
Confirmatio Cartorium?
Cartorium, I believe.
Okay. Confirmatio Cartorium. If the accused so demands, the Confirmatio Cartorium succinctly says, our justices, sheriffs, mayors, and other ministers, which under us have the laws of our land to guide, shall allow the said charters pleaded before them in judgment in all their points, that is to wit, the Great Charter as the common law, and the charter of the forest for the wealth of the realm, of our realm. In other words, the king's men must allow the Magna Carta to be pleaded as the common law if the accused so wishes it. Magna Carta says, henceforth the wit, which is called precipice, shall not be served on anyone for any holding so as to cause a free man to lose his court. And ultimately, that really interprets to any motion made in a court that will cause the free man to lose their court cannot be held and heard. So basically, really, no motion should be heard. Nothing of trying to, you know, dismiss the case or things of that nature. In this case, the free man's court is the court of record of the petitioner as above entitled. The Constitution for the United States of America, Article 3, Section 2, 1, says, the judicial powers shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States. The judicial power is thusly extended to this habeas corpus case as law of the above entitled court of record. The above titled court of record, invoking the extension of the judicial powers of the United States and upon a case in law and proceeding according to the common law as sanctioned by the Constitution and considering the matter that has arisen under the Constitution and the laws of the United States. As stated above, the rule of comity, how is that again? Comity. Just doesn't look right, comity.
It's easier than you're making it.
Comity.
Yeah, comity.
Does not go to the extent of relieving federal courts from the duty of proceeding. Hold on, I think it turned two pages here. No, duty of proceeding. Nope, one page. Thick pages here. Promptly to enforce rights asserted under the federal Constitution. And all considerations of comity must give way to the duty of a federal court to accord a citizen of the United States his right to invoke the court's power and process in the defense of an enforcement of his rights. And by the way, a lot of people will freak out when they see the word citizen here. Oh, no, don't be called a citizen. Look, our founding fathers referred to each other as citizens. citizens didn't mean what these people try to make it. They try to make a citizen a subject, and that is not what a citizen is. But in any event, this
okay,
court
Tom,
accepts.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, this court accepts the duty. Obligation to proceed promptly to enforce rights asserted under the federal Constitution. Thus, this court has the subject matter jurisdiction to examine and act upon the petition for habeas corpus. Further, the parties were duly served personally with a copy of the petition and a writ of habeas corpus, ordered to show cause. Thus, this court has in personam jurisdiction. 5. Petition. Title 28 of the United States Code allows that it is not the responsibility of the petitioner to know by what claim authority the state acts, but that the petitioner may inquire as to the case and the restraints of the restraint petitioner has requested inquiry into the cause of restraint. But none of the respondents has returned any statements of cause of the restraint. Therefore, this court may presume that there is neither legal nor lawful cause of restraint. Petitioner has isolated 5 points upon which he bases his petition. A. The lack of cause of the restraint. B. The lack of jurisdictional basis for the restraint. C. Prosecutorial vindictiveness. D. Reasonable apprehension of restraint of liberty. E. Strict compliance with statutory requirements. And F. Diminishment of rights. Because the respondents have made no return, this court must rule solely upon the evidence before it, as provided by the petitioner. Seneca wrote, "He who decides a case with the other side unheard, though he decide justly, is himself unjust." Mindful of the wisdom of Seneca, we proceed. This court has taken judicial notice of the Federal Rule of Civil Procedure, Title 28, United States Code, insofar as it is not repugnant to the common law. Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, Rule 55, regarding default, is applied here. The record shows that the petition was filed, a writ habeas corpus ordered to show cause issued. The petition and writ were duly served upon the respondents, no return was filed, and return of default was filed. See attached. So no claim may be made that the equity court was unaware of this court's proceedings, nor may the respondents claim they were unaware of the consequences for failing to make a return on the order to show cause. Simply stated, the parties against whom a judgment for affirmative relief is sought have failed to plead or otherwise defend as provided by these rules, and that fact has been made to appear by affidavit in accordance with FRCP Rule 55A. And of course, that includes seal. Huh?
I want to say something here of this,
yeah,
this business of petition that you just read, starting at petition where you start with Title 28, and you go through all these things, lack of cause of restraint in this. These things that you wrote, these two paragraphs are the reason that we can go into their court and argue. See, everybody says there's a lot of people that think that we're messing around in the wrong court. We're giving credibility to the facto. Look at their courts, like John says, they're our courts, and they're structured along our original common law court. So when you go in and you make these cases that they can't answer, they have to acknowledge. They have to give you the court back. You see, they're still using our framework. They're not denying the Constitution. They're not ready yet. So when we proclaim it, they can't deny it. That's why they don't answer it. You see, we are proclaiming our common law, right? How many times in this habeas corpus did we proclaim that we were a people, and then we proved it? And then we said, look, if you're presuming I'm not, you need to show me the presumption of where you think you have this power over me. So it gets proclaimed over and over and over. And anybody that thinks that we don't have standing, right, is not reading the papers like this. The reason John's going through this is you should be paying attention here that this is showing our jurisdictional basis. You know what I mean? And it's over and over again. That's why this is instructive. So just remember, I mean, this is not just a bunch of words. This is stakes in their hearts, every one of these, because they can't answer A, B, C, D, or F, and they will not. Because if they answer them, and they answer them truthfully, they have to admit. And if they deny, we can prove that it's a lie, and now they're committing perjury. So I just wanted to make that point. You know, we go on and on and on, we read this stuff, but you gotta read into it. This is how we're taking our courts back. This is like the bombing run that they do before they send the troops in. We're softening the target. Boom, boom, boom. These bombs are going in, softening the target. By the time we step into the court, they're going to know who we are. They're going to know what to, they're making fun of the language that we use now, John. You know that. Lydia says when she goes into the court, the clerks point at her, and they, you know, this is funny to them. They hear this language and they go, ugh. It's not going to be funny when they're marched out of there in handcuffs, though. Okay, and then we'll be using that language, and this language is going to become commonplace. You know, we're resurrecting it, and look, it was never dead in the first place. Maybe they said it was obsolete, but guess what? It's in the structure, and we're using it because they haven't laid the Constitution to bed yet, and that's why it's important we do this now. Okay, I'll yield now.
All right, thanks, Gerard. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as Gerard mentioned, this is like, you know, soften them up through dropping little bombs or something. But we're about ready to carpet bomb. And then they're going to feel it. That's coming up. We're going to talk about that very as soon as we finish this paper. Anyway, we're now up to 6, finding of facts. Therefore, based upon the record before this court, the court finds that Stephen L. Dean is one of the people as contemplated in the preamble in the Constitution 4, the United States of America. The court finds that the above entitled court is a court of record. The court finds that all respondents were duly served and court personnel were apprised of the petitioner's claim and the writ. All respondents had full notice and fair opportunity to argue their case, and they did not do so. The court finds that the respondents have not presented any legal or lawful cause of the restraint of Stephen L. Dean. The court finds that the respondents have not presented any jurisdictional basis for the restraint of Stephen L. Dean. The court of the respondent did not fulfill the duty to determine whether it has jurisdiction, even though that question is not raised, in order for the exercise of jurisdiction to constitute a binding decision that this court has jurisdiction. The court finds that the respondents have not presented any evidence to prove the absence of prosecutorial vindictiveness by the respondent against Stephen L. Dean. The court finds that Stephen L. Dean has a reasonable apprehension of future restraint of liberty arising from the same facts. The court finds that strict compliance with statutory requirements was not met by the respondents. The court finds that Stephen L. Dean has suffered an unlawful and illegal diminishment of rights. 7. Conclusions of law. Further, the court concludes that this, the above-entitled court, has the sovereign authority to proceed as a court of record with jurisdiction to act in the instant case and subject matter. Further, the court concludes that because all respondents were duly served and court personnel were appraised of the petitioner's petition and writ, and because all respondents had full notice and fair opportunity to argue their case and did not so do, and because none of the aforementioned persons made a return objection or motion, the above-entitled court has acquired in personam jurisdiction of each of the respondents. Further, the court concludes that because the respondents have not presented any legal or lawful cause of or any jurisdictional basis for the restraint of Stephen L. Dean, the respondents do not have any legal or lawful cause against or jurisdiction over Stephen L. Dean. Further, the court concludes that because the respondents have not presented any evidence to prove the absence of prosecutorial vindictiveness by the respondents against Stephen L. Dean, and because the burden of proof is upon the respondents when evidence of prosecutorial vindictiveness has been presented, As a matter of law, the respondents have committed prosecutorial vindictiveness against Stephen L. Dean. This is very important to realize this because he now just won. This paper gives him the power to win a civil case against all these people. He can sue for multi-millions of dollars, all these people, and win the case because the case is won right here. It's done. Failure to give due process. Vindictiveness. This court has decided it's vindictiveness. Why? They had a duty to speak and they didn't speak. The judge had a duty to speak. He didn't speak. The prosecutor, the U.S. attorney had a duty to speak. He did not speak. The jailer had a duty to speak. He did not speak. The FBI agent had a duty to speak. He didn't speak. And the judge who was put before this as magistrate for this purpose, who's the chief judge of that district, we always go after the chief judge to make him the guy responsible, even he hasn't spoken. So silence when there is a duty to speak is fraud, period. That's the law. So therefore, his case is already run if he wants to run another case after this and go after all of them. Further, the court concludes that strict compliance with statutory requirements were not met by the respondent. Stephen L. Dean was denied due process. This is a reasonable probability that he will be denied due process, and there is reasonable probability that Stephen L. Dean will be subjected to further restraints of liberty arising from the same facts. Further, the court concludes that because Stephen L. Dean has suffered an unlawful and illegal diminishment of rights, Stephen L. Dean will be subjected to further unlawful and illegal diminishment of rights. Eight, conclusion summary. The respondent's name is the United States Federal District Court for the District of Utah, statutory. Special Assistant U.S. Attorney Daniel R. Strong, FBI agent S.A. Jewel Albison, U.S. Marshal James A. Thompson, and Magistrate Judge Dustin B. Peed, by their default, their failures to return the writ habeas corpus, have failed to prove their jurisdiction. Therefore, they each and all of them shall abate at law. All proceedings in the relating to the aforesaid court case number, we give the number. None of the respondents is an infant or incompetent. None of the respondents have appeared in the proceedings. Default judgment is entered by this court in accordance with Federal Rule Civil Procedure Rule 55B2. If the petitioner is not already released, is to be released straightway. No damages are rewarded, no costs are rewarded, no attorney fees are rewarded. Now, that's a good way to go. Not to give them any reward of money or monetary system to nobody. We're just interested in getting that individual out of jail. Now it's up to that individual to take this paperwork and go file a case against these people in a federal court for cause, constitutional cause, violation of his unalienable rights of due process protected by the Fifth Amendment. So this is a one case. This case is won. It just has to be taken into court, and it's over. It's a slam dunk. Anyway, that brings us to the end of those two papers. And it's very important to educate, be specific, lay it out, let them know by what authority, what their duty is, what they failed to do, and the rules of the court, the rules of the procedure and process. They cannot deny it. They cannot stop it. They cannot argue against it. They can't do anything. For to do so makes them a lawbreaker. So that's pretty powerful. Okay, so writ of habeas corpus. Anybody who would like to really get learning on this, you should be talking with Greg over at the Investigative and Response Committee, okay? And we'd like to pull all of the state leaders, state coordinators, anybody who would like to take that position as a state coordinator. We've got some in most states, but we don't have a lot of active ones. We need people, and it's okay to be a state coordinator and not be too active. You're helpful on that end. That's fine. But every state needs somebody really active, someone who's going to take the bull by the horn, someone who's going to do their homework, someone who's going to lead their state and lead the people into understanding and the knowledge of these things and to bring things to order, to justice in their state. We need people. We need leaders. So please, think about taking those positions on. They're unpaid positions, of course, but, you know, these positions of administrators, once we get into the courts, indeed are paid positions. We're taking the money that the controller has given to the courts and the prosecutors to orientate and prepare and bring together the grand juries and the trial juries. We're taking that job away from them, which belongs to the people, and the people will then take the administrative role, and it'll be a paid position. But we're not bound by elections. We're not bound by politics. We're not bound by favors. We're not bound by servants. We're still the people. We are the servants of the people always, but we're still the people. And our focus is honor, justice, and mercy, and that's what makes the difference. Okay, so again, we need people to fill leadership roles. We also have other leadership roles. We're looking to put together Oath Keepers Committee and a Militia Committee. I know we have militia people amongst us. They've been in touch with me from time to time. I haven't spoken to some of them, and I'm sure there are others that I've never spoken to. But there are people who are leaders in militias that are amongst us that are listening. Those people should step up and take the lead position in trying to put together and develop a committee and really start to spread this across the nation and into all the states. Over the weekend, Gerard and I were representing National Liberty Alliance on the Common Sense Show. We had an interview, it was a radio interview, and we did post that up on our website. Anybody who's interested in hearing that, they can go to nationallibertyalliance.org. Highlight, what is it, media? Yeah, highlight media, click on radio and TV interviews, and you'll see it dated, I think it was the 10th. What's today? I think today's the 11th, yeah. So this interview took place Sunday night, so it was the 10th. It's dated the 10th. It's the last radio interview, MP3, so anybody interested, it's about a 40-minute interview. Okay, we are about ready to go forward with laying out the paper with our carpet bombing, okay, if I may. We're about ready to start filing in the courts again. We need $20,000. We've collected a little over $7,000. I made arrangements with the people in order to get this faxing going. The people were paying these people who will give us access into their system through some kind of a board. I'll be working that out tomorrow, getting the details and getting access into the board in order to do this mass faxing. We will be faxing 14,100 people, or we're going to refax. We're going to resend through fax the core want to everybody on the federal level, which includes the U.S. Marshals, special agents in charge, federal FBI special agents in charge, all federal court districts, all federal judges. Who else in the federal? Oh yeah, United States Congress, and also the U.S. Senate, and Joint Chiefs of Staff. Let me think, who else is on the federal level, and also the United States Supreme Court. You know, the nine of them in there in Washington. On the state level, this is being filed. And they're being referred to as recipients, respondents. Okay, they are to respond in action. And as you read the papers, you'll see and understand how and what we're doing here. But those will be released. As we file them, we will be releasing them and reading them on our Monday night programs. And so these papers are being released. We have every state assemblyman in all 50 states. Here in New York, we have 150 assemblymen, all 150. You're getting a copy, and they're being called onto the carpet. They have to respond. We here in New York, we have 62. For some reason, I think they got a 63 senators, but okay. But New York should have just 62 senators. All 62 senators will get it, New York state senators. This is the same in every state. Every assemblyman, every senator in every state. the governor of every state, 50 governors, every sheriff, there are 3,133 counties, not all of them have elected sheriffs, but about 3,000 plus sheriffs are elected across the states. So they're all getting a copy of it. Every state court in every county is being the respondent to this. Every state judge in every state is a respondent to this. And over the course of these 7 or 8 papers, we lay out what is required of them. And we point out the law to them. And we go through this whole procedure, you know, this whole process. You'll understand, as we unfold this, you're going to understand and see. And it's extremely powerful. I believe it's extremely powerful.
John, isn't the total number like 45,000 facts?
No, it's 14,100.
Oh, I thought I guess.
Yeah, I thought it was up around 20,000 to 30,000. We were taking guesses. We knew our estimates were probably high at around 30, but they actually came in at 14,100. So that's what it is across America.
Well, that's enough.
So each one of these, over the course of the next 4 to 5 days. 4 to 5 weeks, we are going to fax out 1.4 million pages. This is going to cost us $20,000. We have gotten, and I want to thank everybody who has given up to this point, we've received about $7,000. So people need to continue. You know, anybody who has not given, anybody who has never given, okay, to the cause here at National Liberty Alliance, what are you waiting for? If there's anything, there's nothing more important. And I say this with no hesitation. There is nothing more important anybody can give their money to than for this work we're doing right here through National Liberty Alliance, which is the people. We, the people, through the unified United States Common Law Grand Jury and all of the state juries within. Okay? There is nothing more important than this.
And I have another interesting little fact to go with that. We have roughly 4,000 members, right?
Well, a little over, yes.
A little over. If every member gave $5, guess what that comes out to? $20,000. And that's exactly what we need to do this beachhead landing. This is D-Day, man. This is it. Because this is the one that's going to get everybody. You know, this is the one that they're gonna say, oh, my goodness gracious. You know, because everybody's going to know and they're all going to talk. And the one that doesn't know on Monday, by Friday or the Monday after, they're going to know. There's one good thing here, John. Remember that judge? She didn't want to mess with Dean. She says, "I know you."
Mm-hmm.
Just think, nobody's going. If you get pulled into court, everybody's going to recuse themselves. They're all going to know you.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay, but that's. I just thought that was pretty ironic that we have the exact number of members. If everybody gave $5. That would cover the $20,000. I mean, look at if people, you know, some people can only give $3, other people can give, you know, $5 or $8 or $7. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to work. So, you know, this should be doable for us, is my point.
Right.
You know, at least, and we're hoping and praying that happens because this is it. You know, we've been strategizing for 2 years, and this is kind of the climax to that because this is the spear point that we stick in and open the chink in the armor that's going to open the floodgates, I believe, anyway.
So when you see the papers that we will release as we go forward, you will see what we're talking about, the power and the authority that we're going to be coming under. They cannot deny it. They can't argue it. They can't run away from it. To argue it would really bring an exposure of who they are. To be silent and deny it will also bring exposure to who they are. We also are filing in thousands of media across the nation. We're doing that through email, though. But we're filing everything, and we also have a clause in our papers requiring them, the media, you know, they got this special protection under the First Amendment, and they have that because they are required to tell the people what's going on. And if this isn't important, I don't know what is. But anyway, look it. I don't know of anything going on anywhere except for God's work, save God's work. other than that, I don't know of anything more important than the work we are doing right here collectively, the people, we the people, working together through National Liberty Alliance to build these common law grand jury administrations, okay, and they'd be also jury administrations, to build these administrations to bring justice back into the courts, to stop the insanity. Now, it's going to take us about 5 weeks, maybe 4 weeks, probably over 4 weeks, but under 5 weeks. So let's say 33, 34, 5, 35 days. It's going to take us to get all this paperwork out. You know, we have to give a little few days between each paper so people get to read it, and they're going to be hit. 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 And they're going to be educated. They're going to be warned. They're going to see the truth. They're going to understand. They're going to, we're going to make the case so strong it's undeniable by anyone. And we're going to hold them accountable. Now, Jade Helm is about 7 weeks away, I believe. Let's see. It's 4 weeks plus two is six. I think it's the second week of July, so it's 7 or 8 weeks away. Okay? As far as I'm concerned, this is what I believe. I'm not saying this is absolute, but this is what I believe. Almost, I can never say 100% because I don't know the future. You know, there's always a risk factor. But nevertheless, I believe the end of America is in 8 weeks. I believe that Jade Helm is the Trojan horse, the destruction of America, the removal of our guns, the suppression of the people. The camps will be opened and people of interest will be collected. People who are a problem to them are going to be collected. This is it. Why are they spent? They've been working on this Jade Helm thing, well, before 2007, but the first foreign troops started to enter into this country, into our nation, in 2007. And they have been building up, building up, building up, building up, building up. We have reliable sources say it's over 600,000 foreign troops on American soil. We've been holding these troops on American soil since 2007 as they've been building up. Why? For the Jade Helm? For some kind of a pretend? Why? Well, look, it doesn't make any sense. It's illegal. It's unconstitutional. Our founding fathers would be in Washington, D.C. right now, armed to the teeth. Okay?
You know,
they wouldn't put up with this.
If you read all the executive orders and stand that next to Jade Helm, you've got to be out of your freaking mind to do this. Look at what the executive orders say. They say they can come into your house and take anything you're storing at any time. I mean, the executive orders are ridiculous. I don't know if anybody's reading them. I don't like to read them because, as far as I'm concerned, they have no power, and I don't even, you know.
Can't transport firewood any more than, what, 5 miles or something?
Well, that's a DEC thing, 30 miles.
Is it? Well, that's part of the thing.
And, you know, because there's some kind of bug. But the executive orders are worse than that. They say that they can come into a town and completely come into your house if you got too many rooms and bring people in from these cities that are decimated and house them in your house and move you into another place and completely take control over the local resources and food and water. This is the federal government. This is an executive order, which is there is no authority in the Constitution anywhere to give the president the power to make an executive order. Where the heck did they come up with that baloney? You know? So you take the executive orders and just read a couple of them. They're ridiculous. They're the most ridiculous thing you ever heard. And then think about Jade Helm, all these troops on our soil, even the American troops practicing crowd control and subduing local Helm. Jade stands for joint something, joint operation, right? Because it's joint, because it includes Canada, it includes all these foreign troops. And Helm is homeland eradication of local militants. Well, what the hell does that mean? Homeland security eradication of local militants. So the new threat now is local militants. You know who that is? Those are people when they collapse the money and nobody has food and they're burning the city down. The local militants are the ones that are going to have their guns out defending their homes. They're going to go, oh no, we gotta bring them in. That's you. That's me. We're the local militants. And they're telling us. They're telling us this. And just for another little capper here, when 9/11 was pulled off, the military was doing a whole East Coast Jade Helm type thing on a scenario of running planes into buildings. When them planes got hijacked, they were going, "Is this real or is this the operation? Is it real or is the operation?" There was no interceptor jets. They were down in Maryland. By the time they scrambled them, if they wanted to shoot those planes out of the sky before they got to the buildings, which they have the authority to do, they couldn't get here because it took them almost an hour to get here, 45 minutes. So they've already done this before. They've already done a false flag with a military operation that had everything that was the same operation of exactly what was going down. Now, gee, those terrorists, they knew the military was practicing flying planes into buildings. This Jade Helm with all the foreign troops on our soil, because they know American troops are going to get to a point, they're keeping them very compartmentalized, that they're going to realize that this is actually after the people. In the beginning, they're going to tell them all these people are those sovereign terrorists that don't believe that they got to obey any laws, and we got to, you know, it's continuation of the government, and we got to subdue them. And the troops, some of the troops will buy that. But it's going to get to the point where the troops realize that this is their mothers and their brothers and their sisters and their uncles, and they're not going to do it anymore. And that's why they need a million foreign troops, because those foreign troops, those are the guys that are going to be shooting our troops when the time comes that they don't want to do the job. So okay, it's all in place. Yeah, go ahead.
So Jade Helm is coming. It's upon us. We're in a race against it. That's how close we are. We need those 1 week, 2 week buffer of completion of our paperwork to really, start to simmer. And I believe, I truly believe that what we are doing will stop Jade Helm. You'll see when we get there, and we can't talk anymore about it. We'll just leave it there on that, as far as that's concerned. But nevertheless, even being successful, we're still in for hard times. The dollar's still going to crash. The monetary system is going to collapse. We're going to have to eventually go back to metals. Well, especially if we still have control of America, we the people, then we will go back to metals. A silver dollar will buy a family a four people family for a week. Okay, it'll feed four people for a week. Okay, that's a lot of money. Right now you can buy silver dollars. I don't know what they're going for, 23, 24 bucks or something. I don't know. But whatever it's going for right now. So, look, at anybody who hasn't prepared for this, you're getting real close. You should prepare because something is going to go down no matter what. The question is it going to be a hard fall or is it going to be a soft fall? A hard fall means, really civil war, if you want to call it. Well, not that invasion is what it's going to be. Foreign troops coming up against the American people with a total collapsed monetary system. So that's a hard fall. If we take it softly, we prevent the invasion. We prevent the subversion. We remove the troops from American soil, which we have that potential to do at this point still. Believe me, you'll see as we get closer, as we lay this out. But nevertheless, the potential is there. And that would mean a soft fall because the dollar is still going to collapse. The monetary system is going to fail and collapse. And the question is, do you have enough food to get through a few months at least? Do you have some silver dollars laying around to be able to buy food when it becomes available again? But until that time comes, there's not going to be food. The shelves will be empty. You're not going to get anything. No trucks are going to be moving in or out or nothing. So for a couple of months, you're going to be really at the mercy of whatever you have and the people around you working together to survive. So people really seriously should be looking into buying, long-term food. And that's why we partnered with the people we've partnered here with, New Manna Food, because you can buy these buckets. And I think you read the information on these buckets. Like one bucket may be X amount of meals in it, and it'll feed a family of four for 30 days or something like that, whatever the case may be. But everybody should have at least three months. And I would say 6 months, but at least 3 months of food laid up for an emergency to be able to survive through hard times. I know Glenn Beck pushed this really, really hard, and he still pushes it, and rightly so. The other thing is, and so we provide, you know, that's why we partnership with Numana, because we thought they were a great, great deal. They're really well put together, delicious food and so on and so forth. So, you know, do something. Get some food in your house one way or another. Be able to take care of you and your family and neighbors. You know, I bought lots of bags of rice because rice is a staple. It can hold people. You know, you can eat off rice for months easily and survive, you know. So, you know, to help feed other people that will always be around, you can give them rice. I also bought a lot of sugar, you know, because sugar is something also for trading, and people, you know, it's a use on everything. But anyway, people should prepare, and you also should be preparing for silver. And we've got a good deal with the silver. The guy that we're working with down in Long Island, there's no delivery, it's free delivery, so right there you're saving off the bat, and he's going to give you the best deal that's around. I do junk silver, which means, you know, the silver dollars and the quarters and the dimes, because everybody understands that. In hard times, everybody's going to understand the silver. It's going to have great value very quickly once we start trading again, okay? The other thing is, you know, I bought a colloidal silver. That's how you pronounce that, colloidal, right? Colloidal silver maker.
Yeah, colloidal.
And the name of the company is Silver Lung. To the best of my understanding, it's one of the best products out there. People should get together and buy a Silver Lung colloidal silver maker. And, I mean, you can make endless amounts of colloidal silver, you know, and if you were wounded, this is something you want to put compresses onto a wound. This is what you'd be putting on because it helps to heal. But it's good for the health. It's good for disease, all kinds of problems. Okay, people need to look into that. Seed, you know, that's why we went to a partnership with the Survival Seed Vault, okay? I couldn't believe the prices that you could buy this seed for, okay? And so people should have seeds so they can plant gardens, you know? They also have, what do they call that, sprouts or something, Gerard, that can grow in 3 weeks? Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, your sprouts. Sprouts are any seeds. You sprout them, and they become into these little like bean sprouts. You've seen bean sprouts. The Orientals use them a lot. When a seed sprouts, it increases its nutritional capacity, you know, exponentially, hundreds of times. As a matter of fact, you know, certain sprouts like alfalfa sprouts have more protein available than steak. And what you do is you soak them for 24 hours overnight. You dump the water out. Then you put them in on a screened tray. They sell these stackable trays. And then you water them every day. And within 4 days, 5 days, you have these things. They're about 3 inches long, and you pull them out, and you use them like a salad. And, of course, the bigger beans, you know, that's alfalfa sprouts. They're like chia seeds. They're very small. But then you got bigger seeds that have bigger sprouts. Some of them are very nutty tasting. You know, a lot of people that don't like green stuff like John will gag eating them probably, but you can put salad dressing on them and stuff like that, you know what I mean? And you put them in your sandwiches. But look, they grow in the dark. Matter of fact, you don't want a lot of sunlight on them because the greener they get, I mean, they get more chlorophyll the greener they get, but they get more bitter then. You keep them nice and in the dark as you're growing them and then you're using them. I mean, you put them out in the sun a little bit at the end, but you keep them in the refrigerator in the dark. And they stay nice, you know. Like I said, if you get them too green, then they're less palatable, you know. But you could, if they're marching in the streets and you're hiding, you could be growing those vegetables downstairs. They'll get you through a tough time. You can literally live off of them, you know. And not only that, you know what's going to happen when you're in your basement living off of sprouts like a gargoyle down there? You're going to be getting healthy. Because you're not going to be eating any crap. You're going to be eating just the bare essentials of life. So maybe that's the plan. We'll get healthy. I don't know. Because it's pretty nasty out there.
All right. So anyway, everybody needs to prepare. We've offered some good things that we felt. You can buy them from us. You can buy them from somebody else, whatever. Of course, buying from us or through us, of course, is going to support what we're doing. It's going to help get this mailing out. Now, one other thing we're doing is we are putting hard copy mails mail. Of all of these papers that we'll be sending out, they'll be mailed hard copy through the United States Postal Service and to all 94 federal district courts. So those are the only ones that's going to get hard copy. Everyone else goes through fax. Fax has been declared quite some time now. You can serve through faxes. And all. They're moving a lot of different ways through faxes. Obviously, we have no other way to serve people other than through that, because just think of putting folding 1.4 million pages into eight different envelopes for 14,100 people over the course of 30 days, the cost of the toner, the cost of the paper, the cost of the mailing, the envelopes. I forget about it. It's an impossible task. We can't do that. But facts we can do. And we worked very hard to get to where we're at. And all the papers are written. They're all ready to go. You know, we're locked and loaded, so to speak. We should be going through the process tomorrow. We'll be working the boards, figuring it out. I think Wednesday morning we're going to start executing the facts. Like I said, I signed the contract, and we will move 7,000 over to these people. I got another 1,000 I know is coming in, so I'll push that 1,000 over to them. We got to get the rest of the 20,000 to these people. So we need money. We're acting in faith. We have no choice. We can't wait one more day. We're going forward. So anybody who really is interested in saving this nation, reach into your pocket, pull out 5, 10, 20 bucks, whatever you can afford. If you can afford 1,000, give us 1,000. If you can afford 100, if you can afford $5, give it to us. The widow's mite is the most powerful, in my opinion anyway. It's the most blessed. So we'll get a blessing from the widow's mite.
Look, even if you have money, and when this thing goes down, guess what? You're not going to have it. It's going to disappear overnight.
Yeah, so turn it into silver or send it to us to use right now.
Well, look, this will what we're doing will soften the blow. You know, they have no intentions of letting us do our own thing. They want to outlaw gold and silver. They want a completely digital currency. I just got a mainstream report through Jim Grickers about the imminent financial collapse, in case you don't believe it. Now, this is mainstream. These guys advise for people that have money. They're a financial service that talk to the guys that are in the know where to put their money. And this Jim Rickards is pretty good. And I just want to read a little thing that he wrote here about what's going on in the banking industries. And he talks about the two big-to-fail banks that are even bigger today than they were in 2008, when they almost brought down the global economy. The size of the derivatives, the same instrument Warren Buffett once called weapons of mass destruction, are now worth more than $700 trillion. That's 10 times bigger than the entire world economy. And believe me, those derivatives are coming down. In other words, the feds can't print enough U.S. dollars to backstop the financial markets if they blow up again. There's no QE program that's big enough, no printing press that can run long enough to pump that many new dollars out to bail out the system. Put simply, this crisis will be too big for even the U.S. government to solve. In this coming crisis, the Federal Reserve will need a bailout. During private conversations, two members of the Fed have already admitted to me that the Fed is secretly broke. This means the world will have to bail out the entire U.S. financial system out. The monetary authorities around the globe are already preparing for that day. In fact, that's exactly, you know, and he talks about these 24 people that he put together, and they already have a plan. They have 24 people who oversee the international monetary and financial system got together to design a new world money, and they already have a plan to use this money, quote-unquote, to replace the dollar as the world's reserve currency. Until now, this plan has been cloaked in secrecy. The monetary authorities know if the word leaks out to the general public, it would lead to panic. And so he's trying to warn against this. And he says, look at, he says this is a currency that they've never seen. This mysterious new currency will be used to bail out the U.S. When it happens, the final nail in the coffin for the U.S. dollar will happen overnight. And he says, and this isn't the money that you're currently using. He said, before you start guessing, this new spooky currency has nothing to do with Bitcoin, the euro, the Chinese yuan, or anything you may have heard from mainstream media. Instead, it's an odd mix of many different currencies, all racked up into a single note that governments will use between each other. In fact, you won't even be able to touch it or spend it at all. It's unlike anything we've ever seen before. That's why I call it spooky new money. But once this plan to replace the dollar with this new global currency is executed, the financial markets will plummet. You see, what they're going to do is they're going to seize all the money. They're going to give you a bank card, and you're never going to get cash in your hand. Hence the mark of the beast. And if you don't have that card, you won't buy and you won't sell. Now, there's always going to be black markets where people will take gold and silver, but if they catch you, they'll cut your hand off or they'll put a bullet in your head.
Right, so but we are looking to prevent this by preventing Jade Helm, by doing the work that we're doing right now and getting it done within the next 4 to 5 weeks is the preventative medicine of all this stuff. It will put, believe me, I know it's hard to maybe take it in because you don't know exactly what we've got here, but when you see it, you're going to understand it and you're going to say, yes, that's it. That will do what it has to do. And so, you know, we're here to prevent this insanity. We're here to prevent the craziness.
And he believes that could happen in the next 6 months. And so he's right on board.
Right in the game. Right in the heart. Right here.
He says, I believe this could happen in the next 6 months. And, I mean, this isn't us talking. These are very highly educated people in the financial and the stock market world. So, I mean, we're not just going off of Internet hearsay. You can look this guy up, Jim Rickards, and look up Agora Financial and see what they're saying, what's going to happen with this avalanche. He says it's going to be like an avalanche. When that one snowflake hits the mountain, it's all going to come tumbling down. So that's why we need to move.
Okay, so let's move forward here. Here's the key thing. People need to get active. If you're not active, get into a committee. Get involved. Become a leader. Let's get this thing going. We're going to have a whole bunch of people coming in real soon, and that's where the real power is going to start to build up. But we have to control it. We have to train these people. We have to teach these people the principles and that they have to act upon. We also need the necessary money, the funds, to pay for all the stuff that we're doing. And again, we're acting in faith. We're going forward. We're going to do what we got to do. And we're expecting that the people want to save America, and they're going to send the necessary monies in. So send us a few dollars, whatever you can afford. Let's get it in here. Let's do it. And by all means, look, if you're not prepared, at least a month or 3 months worth of food, go get something. Do something, okay? And again, we have put together and offered the necessary things you need, the money, real money, silver, the food in containers, ready to eat, and also the seed, and also for your health, for bacteria and flu and all kinds of stuff. I don't know if it does the flu, but I guess it does. All kinds of bugs. That's where the colloidal silver comes in. Colloidal silver comes in. So all of these things people need, and it's not that expensive. And again, you know, you buy a little every week, and before you know it, you got months' supply of everything you need. So do it. Do it for yourself. Do it for your family. Be prepared, because we're going to go through hard times no matter what happens. The question is, are we going to make it soft or is it going to be hard? And we don't want to go through hard times. We want to make it soft. We want it to be short, okay? And that's what we're endeavoring to do here. So, again, get involved. Become active. Give. Let's do it. And pay attention to what we're going to be talking about from this point forward. Every week we're going to be delivering some serious information, some of which I believe should blow your mind and say, whoa, okay, this is going to do it. We're going to start opening this up as we go forward. And again, we can't do it prematurely. It has to be done the way we're doing it. So with that, I think we're coming to the end of, we spent a lot of time here, almost 2 hours. Anything else we need to announce or say before we move into questions and answers here? Gerard, Robert, Jen?
I'm good.
I don't know if Gary's here. Gary? Okay. All right, if nobody has anything, we'll go into Q&A. I'll take it for 15 minutes or so, and I'll pass it over to you. It's almost 11 o'clock, so. But let me open up Q&A. But before anybody gets into Q&A, anybody who has been in the Q&A in the past week or two, wait 2 or 3 minutes. Let the people who have not had the ability to speak in the last couple of weeks and would like to speak, let them get in first. So give them 2 or 3 minutes to get into the queue before you get into the queue. Also, people who have just first-time visitors, whatever, get into the queue if you have a question or a comment or something. So anybody that's been in the queue, that's been conversing with us over the past 2 weeks, hold off 2 minutes before going into the Q&A. Here we go. So anybody who wants to get into the queue, what's it, star 6? What is it, Gerard? Star 6?
Yeah, star 6 and I think 1.
Okay, star 6 to get into the queue. Okay, Johnny B., you got the mic, go right ahead. Johnny B., you've been unmuted.
Yeah, trying to get my mute off the phone here. John, I've been on just about every call that I attend here. Still dealing with trying to get the fundraiser prize to my brother, Carl Hempel, here
right.
In Kansas. He hasn't heard a word.
Well, we've already paid all that out. As a matter of fact, I send a copy of the paperwork to someone up in, who was it? I think it was Meredith. Up in Massachusetts, and there was some other people that were asking, and they were looking at different charts. I guess there's an AM and a PM. We went off
right.
On one, and you're looking at another one. And we've laid out the numbers of the winners. We've already paid out. We've paid about $600, maybe $700, over $600, $625, $650. We collected
okay.
About $3,000
well,
out of that total, and then we paid out $600.
Well, according to the calendar I filled out in January, when Carl donated his $100, he bought 5 tickets. And
okay.
I started this as soon as the numbers started hitting in March. We got
okay.
Over the list. I went on the Pennsylvania Lottery for the PM call.
It was
I got
January
a check for $25 daily. Right.
January
I got a check for $25 that I didn't deserve, and I sent it back. With all
and
the
I,
information,
and I
a copy
that, yeah,
of my
I saw
calendar.
That check. It's sitting on my desk somewhere, and I don't know why you sent it back. That's the number that hit on
it's
the
not
papers
mine.
That I...
It's not mine. That's not
okay.
The PM number. That was
okay.
An AM number, John.
Let's go to this one more time. You look in PM. I think I went with AM. That's the difference. The AM numbers were the numbers that I pulled off and worked the charts. I didn't even know at the time
okay.
When I pulled the charts. Hold on. When I pulled the charts, I didn't even know there was AM or PM. Which is good. It just makes it more of a mix. Look, we pulled those numbers. We charted them out. We had X amount of winners. I forget how many winners there were. It totaled $625, $650 in payouts, and we paid it out. It's done. Now, if you're looking at a PM and you want it to be PM, it's not PM. It was AM.
But the agreement at the beginning of the fundraiser was it was the PM drawing of the Pennsylvania Lottery.
Not for
that
me.
That was in the
I
rules.
I never knew anything about either. Mary originally handled this, then something happened and she got sick or something and disappeared for a while. And when it came out to payout time, I just pulled the numbers and that's what went out. It's all, look,
okay.
I didn't choose anything.
We'll work at it from here.
Just pulled the numbers out and paid out. So everybody's been paid out. If they think there's a question about it, I'll send them a copy of the numbers that we have. I sent the one out to John.
I've got a
John
copy
Meredith.
Of them.
Huh?
I've got a copy of them, John.
Okay.
I got a copy of them. You can take that hush money you sent me and just throw it back in the kitty.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else, Johnny?
No, there were several other issues, but I'm good. I was just
okay.
Worried about Carl.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Next is David from California. Anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6?
Thank you, John.
How you doing, David?
Okay, I was wondering, with the fundraising thing, maybe you already have plans for this. How about some kind of page so people can look and see where you are as far as collections, 7, 8, 10, 12, 13,000. That kind of like gets people excited when they see the progress. How about maybe a state-by-state invitation with the tracking on the website about which states, like if you divide 20,000 by 50, whatever that is, 400 or whatever, invite states to commit to 400, invite states to sponsor neighboring states that are strapped, and get some recognition for those states and those individuals that want to be recognized for their contribution towards the 20K.
Okay. Well, that's a good idea. You know, if we had someone who can kind of take care of this, because I tell you, when we went into this thing with the fundraiser we did with the numbers, which sounded like a great idea, but I never anticipated on really operating it or dealing with it. I was expecting other people, and I ended up dealing with all that stuff. And it just became, I got too much other things to do. I haven't got time to do that. So I kind of put myself in a catch-22. Well, we need money. I got to figure a way to collect money so we can survive and do the things we have to do. But on the other end, I got to be other places doing other things, participating in writing and brainstorming and involved with all of these different committees, getting the paperwork together for that, making sure that the flows going between all the committees, and so that we created a board meeting now, which we have every Tuesday. People are invited to that at 9 p.m. Eastern. And the board meeting, the committees come together and they give account to where we're at, and we kind of look at the new things coming up. So everybody is kept abreast of what's happening. So it's way too much work for me to control, but if someone wanted to handle that, you know, I'd be more than happy to do something. You know, we've collected, it's hard to figure out if the money came from particular states, it's hard to figure out what states sent what. I'm not aware. I am aware of a few states that have sent some money. And a matter of fact, I think two states that sent $1,000 apiece. So that's a big chunk of the $7,000 we've already collected. And I'm not sure I'm aware of anything else. It's hard to keep track of what's coming in. Most of it is in small donations, but we do get some 60, 100, 50, here and there. The past few days, when we started this thing, we got a few hundreds and 500s. Well, maybe only one 500, but we got a few hundreds and things that came through the donation page. And I don't know who to attribute it to in the sense of a state, so I can't figure that out. But we did call for a special meeting, okay, over the weekend. Jan and Robert met with the leaders, all the state coordinators, I believe. He'll correct me if I'm wrong. But he met with the leaders to really get a drive going where each state would send in X amount of dollars, I think is what was put together. And Jan, if you're here, maybe you can express more what took place, because I didn't go to that meeting. But I think we were looking to get every state to throw in, $300 or $400. I think it's $400 of every state through, and $400 would be $20,000. So 50 times 400 equals 20,000. So I think that's what the number was. We had some states that committed. Nobody denied, but that doesn't mean they're going to send. And you see, again, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about serious leadership. We have to have serious leadership that understands that it takes money. We have to mature up and realize it, the dirty part of this whole thing is money. But what are you going to do? You got to have it. Someone's got to pay the bill. Someone's got to pay for the fax machines, the faxing. Someone's got to pay for the paper and everything. So it's up to the people to send money so we can do those things. And so, we need serious people. If we had serious leadership in every single state that said, okay, my responsibility for the next week or two is to make sure we collect amongst us. New York, for instance, has 350 or more members. Look, it's nothing to ask everybody, hey, give us a buck and a quarter apiece or something, you know, whatever. It's nothing to collect $400 from 300-400 people, okay? So we need the serious leadership that's going to get on the phone and say, hey, I need $5. We're going to count on you because, and get that money drive. We need serious people that's going to come to these, to come and learn how to write habeas corpuses, because every state needs to be on their own. Look, everybody's got to get their own wings and fly. And a lot of people want to, but they want to do it prematurely. They're not ready. And we know, we're telling them they're not ready. Let us teach you what you need to know. And when you're ready, then you go do your business. Because, look, that's when we're free. But until you get there, we all got to get under instruction. We got to learn to do what we have to do. We got to figure out what we got to do. And we got to do a lot of things collectively together. So we need serious leaders. You know, I know, Dave, you are a very serious leader. You're on top of everything. We've got quite a few people like you, but we don't have enough of those people. People who are up there, people that get the job done, people that come to the meetings, people that get whatever it is, they get it done, okay? Or they come up with ideas on how to get it done like you're coming up with right now. We need people like that in every state. We only need a handful right now. You know, I'd say 4 people in every state is sufficient. 10 people is better, though. 20 people is even better. But 4 people in every state that are really serious leaders and really want to get this job done, that's what we need now, because that kind of activity and that kind of leadership will breed more activity and breed more leadership and take it down into the counties, because that's what we have to build. You know, we're here in New York. We have 62 counties. We have 350 or so members, okay, in New York. And our membership should be a no-brainer to be able to get people in every county. But in order to get an active and become leaders, but in order to do that, someone has to step up and be the first leader and the first active individual. And again, that encourages other people to do the same thing. And we're doing it for a reason. We're doing it to save our nation. This is it. I think everyone that comes to these meetings know there is no way to save America save by lock and load at some point, because that's where it's heading, other than what we are doing. Our plan is a connection in our plan for all the other liberty groups. Whatever they're doing, at some point when they finally see what we're doing, they'll be able to connect right in and operate with us. While they continue to do what they're doing, they'll be able to work with us, and we can go as one people here in the United States to take our nation back. And that's what we're counting on to happen. But, you know, someone brought up getting a committee going on how to raise money. What would you call it? A raising money committee, or whatever you'd call it. And maybe that's what we need.
Last time you wanted to raise money, you had that little thermometer, whatever it was, our goal. Remember, right. It would go up each time. And I really think that encouraged people. Now, what Dave was saying is, you know, if people want to get recognized for giving money, it would be very easy through the state coordinator. So I could sit here at my house and I could send in $50. And if I wanted that listed, all I have to do is call my state coordinator up and say, look, I sent $50 on such and such a date. And he could log that, and then that could go.
Absolutely. If we can have someone that'll take that control of that, and gather that information, and then we can post it on the website. Yes, you know, we had these thermometer type things twice up on the website, and we did it through the donation page. And what happens is, whenever anybody donated online, whether it was a one time or a regular donation, it would register and raise the thing up. The problem with that is that we also have the people who are giving $5 a month.
Right.
And that also registered in it.
Right.
You know, we collect a couple of $1,000 a month, which really basically pays the bills and keeps things going. And then that gets into that. So we have to be careful not to, because we still have to pay the bills. We still have to pay the bills. But we can, you know, word of mouth, okay, if people in the state know who's sending what and they tally it up and pass the word to one individual who's collecting this information and putting it on in an Excel sheet, and then I could take it and pop that Excel sheet right online and you could see the state and how much they've given. Sure, we could do that. So if we can have someone to organize that, I don't know. Jen, what do you think? Robert, what do you think? Gary, what do you think?
It's doable, and a lot of people have contacted me complaining that they never get credit for the donations, that they're never thanked, and that's one way of giving them that recognition.
Okay, so if we can find somebody that wants to run this, get in touch with Robert and Jan, and between the get in touch with Robert or Jan, and between the three of them, Robert, Jan, and Gary, they will work out something what we need. They'll have to get someone that'll put this and collect this information into an Excel sheet. Once it's on an Excel sheet, then I can post it very easily, and I can update it daily if that's what it takes. So, this would be good. So if we have a volunteer for doing this to help run this part, get in touch with Robert or get in touch with Jen. Go to our website, of course, National Liberty Alliance, and click on the directory, and you'll find their phone numbers there.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else, Dave? Good idea. I appreciate all of your enthusiasm and ideas and so on.
Okay, thank you. With regards to the faxing project, is the $7,000 enough to get started, or do you need like 15 or 18 before
well,
you can actually...
Well, no, it was started. It was started. $7,000 was good for them to start us, so we're going. We got $1,000 coming in from Pennsylvania, I believe. Is that right, Jen? It's coming in from PA.
Yes, that's correct.
So that's coming in, and that'll be $8,000. And as money comes in, we'll be pouring it right in, and we're moving it over. And, you know, they're entrusting us. But look, we're not going to get ahead of them. You know they're going to flip the switch off if we start pumping out more than we paid for. So, but we are starting. The game is going. We're on focus, and we'll see where we're at next week. But it should be no problem for us to pull together $20,000. It really shouldn't be. Again, I want to speak to the people who have never given National Liberty Alliance anything. There's a lot of people who have carried the weight, and a small group of people, a couple of hundred people, period, literally, a couple of hundred people have carried the weight, the financial burden of National Liberty Alliance. And so we've been collecting a couple of $1,000 every month to pay all the bills. But we've got over 4,000 people. So come on, the rest of the people who haven't been giving, give us $5. You know, even if it's just once, just give it to us. But let's do what has to be done. Either you believe in what we're doing or you don't. And the problem is a lot of people, they get to a point and say, we'll let the next guy do it. The problem is that 90% of the people are letting the next guy do it. And that's the way we've been trained, I believe. I really, truly believe we've been brainwashed into that kind of thinking. And we have to come out of that. We have to do and give to what we really believe in. And so, anyway, there it is. Let's see what we can put together. Anything else, Dave?
Okay, thank you. Last question. Is there any way to rearrange the sequence of, say, the first five papers so that in amongst the first five papers is a focused and targeted Jade Helm paper?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Is it possible when you start the faxing project to have one of the first five papers be a Jade Helm-oriented paper?
Well, it's not necessarily working that way, and I can't really talk too much about it, but we have seven papers written, plus the Quo-Wanto, which is eight. Eight papers. The papers are meant to educate every single elected official in America. And generally speaking, by educating one group, you're educating all groups. But we are making certain focuses towards certain groups. We also have a certain focus towards Jade Helm and other serious situations that we put together in a very, very powerful paper. And we will release it as we go. So that's the best I can really say on that.
But
I can't talk too much about it.
The Jade Helm the paper that addresses Jade Helm will be in there. And look, these are going to go out pretty fast because they're going to go out every 4 days or so, right, John?
3 or 4 days, twice a week.
Right.
We're going to be sending papers
right
out twice a week until we're done. And then we're not done yet, okay? We want to continue filing papers, and so we're going to continue to want more money to file those papers, you know, because we have to fax them out. Why? I think by the time we get to these papers out, I think our membership is going to go through the roof. I think the support is going to go through the roof. I think we'll have a lot of people. We'll be able to do whatever we want to do then. Okay, I think that's what's going to happen. And you know, we're putting the news on what do you call it, on a hot seat here also, because they need to produce what they're supposed to be producing, and that is to tell the people the news, the real news, not the BS, the real news. And we're going to hold their feet to the fire. I'll tell you why. I will not rest until we seek out every editor out there that's responsible for the real news and doesn't report on what's happening in the next, as we're going forward. We need to know who's doing, who's supporting us, who's writing it, who's stopping it. Because we are revealing things that they should be revealing to the people. And so we're going to go after the editors because they're the ones that stop the things from going in and out. They've got a boss. We'll go after them too, I guess. And also, ultimately, you know, well, it's subversion. No matter how you get it, it's subversion. So, all right, anything else?
Yeah, I just want to commend Robert and the rest of the leaders at the district and national level for helping to promote the idea of crowdfunding and internet-based fundraising.
Yeah, I heard about the crowdfunding. I'd like to talk. I just saw that over the weekend, and I forgot all about it. Today was a real hectic day for me, so I haven't thought about anything like that. But I saw that over the weekend. That looks like a good idea. And Jan and Robert will talk to you maybe tomorrow about that because that looks interesting.
Okay, I'm out.
Thanks, Dave. Okay, 260-744, unknown. Who's the unknown person? Give us your first name and state, please.
Dolores in Indiana.
Dolores from Indiana?
Yes.
How you doing, Dolores? By the way, can someone put down next to Dolores' phone number, Dolores, well, put down a state first, Indiana, Dolores, so we know who she is next time she comes in. Go ahead, Dolores.
Okay, I've successfully got the writ of error into the courts, and the Lord blessed me for doing it, so I know he's in it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, my questions are, for instance, what am I to be expecting? How long am I to wait on them? What kind of papers am I supposed to prepare next?
Yeah, well, it's hard for me to get involved in a particular case. We have a lot. If you took the courses online on our website, and you also go into some of the paper courses we have, you know, we have a book on how to file papers and procedures.
I don't
and
have
how
time
they work.
For that. I'm in court
I know,
now.
I know, but we have so many people. You
Is
know,
there
I,
somebody
I
can talk to, like one of the committees or something?
You might find somebody personally who you'll talk to from an unofficial position. In other words, we were just talking with the investigative committee, okay, research and investigative committee, and they've been giving a little too much information to people and giving them details and legal assistance, and they can't do that. They could do it on a personal level, but they can't do it from the position of being with National Liberty Alliance or with the grand juries, because we have to stay focused where we're at. And, you know, when one solution is not enough, yeah, you've given them a writ of error, what's the next step? Exactly. What are you going to do next? I mean, that's the big question. And I've given over and over again. I'll give it one more time, real, real simple. I say this 1,000 times. It's the same thing over and over again. You walk into a courtroom, okay? They shouldn't even be talking there, and you object to the whole process.
I'm going to a courtroom. I'm doing this by paper.
Yes, I understand that. But when you go into the courtroom, have you been? What kind of case is this?
This is an administrative case assigned by God. The Lord, it's the Lord's in it.
Wait, what do you mean an administrative case?
An illegal activity of the government.
Yeah, but are you in a state court, the Supreme Court? What are you in?
A federal court.
You're in the federal court?
Yes.
Okay, so you have a federal issue.
Yeah.
Well, look, it's very simple. Whenever they do the wrong thing, you give them a writ of error. Here's the bottom line on this, okay? Here's the bottom line. Every court you walk into is an unconstitutional court. It's a court not of record. And you have to object to their process and procedure and pull them back into a court of record. They're going to violate that. That's a conspiracy. So you write a writ of error in order to overturn whatever the judge did in the case. But then you have to take it to the next step. You have to move. If you don't move, they're going to come out after you, and they're going to ignore you, and they're just going to steamroll you. You got to move into the next step, and the next step is to sue them. What do you sue them for? You sue them for hijacking you into a foreign court, a court not of record. You sue them for conspiracy against your unalienable right of due process. That's your cause, and that's what you sue them for. And you remove the judge and whatever prosecutors or whoever's on the other side of the case, you move them all out of there because you just sued them. Now they have to recuse themselves, and you get a whole new group of people in there. And now you say, well, now what are you guys going to do?
Okay, so
because
far,
you know what I'm going to do.
At the Kirk level, and it's in two courts because the consular was in South Bend, and the clerk was in Fort Wayne. So do I take it to another court?
I cannot advise. I just can't advise you anymore because I don't know the specifics, and then there's another step after the step that I would advise you on.
Okay.
That's where the problem is. Look, here's the thing. We all have this problem. When we first came into the courts, we came into the courts about 6 years ago or so. I don't remember how many years, but about 6 years ago, and we knew nothing, absolutely nothing. And we just had to lose a lot of stuff as we kept coming back as a pit bull, and we kept learning and learning. We went to the School of Hard Knocks, and then we discovered, the common law, particularly through what Bill Thornton was teaching. And we just kept building and building and learning and learning until we got to the point that we understand now what's going on. But there's nothing going to beat that education. That's the education you need. So you're right. People are finding themselves in court today, and they never thought about it before, preparing for potentially going to court. So they're going in, and they can't do nothing. They don't know what to do. The only solution, and the only answer is to become educated. If it's a case that you can let it go and come back later when you're educated, then that's what you do. If it's a case that they're coming out after you sort of criminally, but they're
going to
live with a fine, pay the fine, and come back later and get them after you've educated yourself. And after we get to the other side of things also, because it'll be a different thing then. So if you're facing jail time, okay.
No, I'm not. None
okay.
of that.
Yeah, those people are the people I would say habeas corpus is.
Okay, now, before you advise me to get a stamp, could I use Indiana common law jurisdiction with the date and
absolutely
the,
not. No.
Can you get
no.
more remedy?
What can I use?
Well, did you go out and look at the seals that Bill Thornton suggested?
I've got a copy of it right in front of me from Missouri or
okay,
Mississippi,
well,
the grand jury seal, but I'm not grand jury.
Right, you can't use that. But Bill Thornton, do you know
it's
who Bill Thornton is?
No.
Really
you don't know who?
Show it.
Someone's talking in the background. Anyway, you know who Bill Thornton? You don't know who Bill Thornton is? Okay,
no,
well
don't.
That's if you he's the guy you got to go listen to. We've got four of his lectures. Okay, they're about 8 hours apiece. We have them up online. If you take our civics course, you will find him in the civics course, and he's got four lectures. And he lays out everything in there. Now, you really got to keep notes, stop and rewind, stop and rewind. I listened to him 3, 4, 5 times, each one of his tapes. I took notes as we went along, and I got a lot of education from that. And then, of course, I continued reading and studying and looking into a lot of other things. But it was Bill Thornton's ideas and theories and positions that I really saw what I needed to learn. And so that's what you need to learn is that. But there is no magic bullet per se for this.
I just today got a new denial, which I didn't deserve, but thank the Lord for it, that it gives me another 6 months to get back into the courts.
Well, now you got 6 months to study. You can study this stuff in 6 months.
Listen, when she gives them a writ of error, she also has to make a decision. You have to give
right.
them an order. Now, you don't just give
well,
them
what she has to
error.
Do is she has to overturn his
right.
order, and then she has to do something about it. He just violated your right of due process by doing the decision he made. Now you got to sue that judge.
And
well,
that's the mistake
judge.
That we used to make early on. We would not take the next step, and so then they know that you don't know what to do.
So that it's the clerks right now. It's not at a judge. It's just in the area of the clerks.
I sent papers down recently to the federal court here in the Southern District, and I sent it without money, and I made it clear on the paper, my front papers, letting them know I don't pay. I'm one of the people. That clerk sent it back to me 2 days, 3 days later. It came back, okay, when I got it back.
Mm-hmm.
I then wrote papers and sued the clerk and filed it in the same place, and I also sent my papers back and demanded them to file it. They filed the papers, stamped it, and that was it. Okay, now I'm not chasing the clerk because the clerk finally did do the right thing. Now the clerk didn't do this under his or her own will and idea, not at least not in the federal court. It was the judge.
Right.
And I even wrote it up in such a way with a John Doe in it looking for who that judge is that commanded her to send my paperwork back. Okay, So now I'm not chasing the. I think it was a female clerk. So I'm not chasing her. It took me that extra step to get it through, but I'm in. My papers are now filed. They're in the court. Now the judge turned around and he tried to turn my papers back. I sent him a writ of error. I overturned his papers, and I'm waiting for his next move, because his next move then is going to be. He knows. He's got to know. I'm going to sue him. Okay. For violating my unalienable right of due process. You can't charge me for justice. Who are you? Who are you that you think going to tell me I want $400 to pay for justice? Why don't you pay anything? I already paid for the building. I paid for that fax machine. I paid for the clerk, the salary. I pay your salary. Why am I going to give you $300-$400?
Once you know how to do that little process that he's talking about, where you do the writ of error and then you overturn it and you send it back and you sue them, then what happens is you end up with another judge, because he has to recuse himself because he's being sued. And by the time you get to the second or third judge, you're going to get a judge in there that gives you relief because they just want to get rid of you. And that's, you know, that's the kind of victories
we've had. In other
words,
the next thing I need to do is start suing the clerk and the John Doe counselor in South
Carolina. That's the only way.
You sue everybody, and then as they acquiesce, then you let them go and you move to the next one, the next part.
Okay.
And you don't wait.
You do it right away. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Just do it. Because you look at when you hesitate and they know, and then you fail to act and you go back a second time and a third time, before they know it, they say, hey, this person doesn't know what they're doing. And that's when they turn the steamrollers on and you're done.
Okay.
Especially if it's a criminal case.
Okay. Good.
Look at, educate yourself. Go take our civics course. At the end of our civics course, we're going to be adding soon. I haven't had time to really go work on this yet, but we're going to be adding an additional course. We're adding a point-by-point, line-by-line, word-by-word study of the Constitution. And so we're going to go through that, the powers and the authorities and everything. We'll go through the Bill of Rights, and that's going to be added on to that.
I'm not assigned to become one of your people as far as doing the work is concerned. I am assigned by God to go to court. So if I join in, am I going to get all this email and stuff that I don't need, that I can't use?
Well, I don't know what all this email that you don't need, that you don't use, but look at people who have access to the email from time to time have abused it and we tell them to stop. People are not to be sending email using our email addresses to people. Now, people don't have direct access to the emails, but they have access to certain areas, which allows them to send, for instance, an email to everyone in a state or a certain area or a certain group of people, and they have the abilities to do that kind of emailing. But we don't send out a lot of email per se. I send out one a week. Sometimes too. Probably the one who sends more email out than anyone else other than myself, for instance, Sheila. She sends out one a week or two a week. You know, sometimes it's been 2 a week, but generally it's one a week or even less. Eric might send out something when there's an emergency going on, and he'll try to stay state, you know, because only the people of that state would really want to go to a courtroom for the courtroom observers group. And Robert and Jan, they may send out an email occasionally. A lot of times they'll send out emails and they're curtailed just to the leaders. You know, we can click on send it to all coordinators, send it to all county organizers, send it to all of the district leadership, or send it
John,
to...
John, doesn't she have the ability? Doesn't she have the ability to make that one email at the end of the week?
No.
She doesn't.
But look, we're talking about, at the most, 3 or 4 emails a week. And if that's too much for people, then I don't know what to tell them. And I tell everybody, we had to learn a little bit, you know. Some people got long-winded. But I tell everybody that sends email out, keep it short, okay, so we don't overload people with email. And try to keep it once a week or less. And also, you know, like when Robert or Jan sends email out with a lot of information in it, it's usually just going maybe to the district coordinators, and they're operating business. So, you know, they're really involved.
What do you recommend about the seal then? What do I do with it? How do I handle that?
Go to 1215.org and then put in, seal, and you will, you know, run it through their search engine on that page, 1215.org. and then you'll find a search engine there. Put it in the search engine SEAL, and he'll give you pictures and ideas and thoughts of SEALs. I mean, it's very simple, you know.
Okay.
My SEAL, okay, has on the out, you know, common law or natural law by the grace of God on the inner ring,
okay,
and that's in Latin. The outer part of my SEAL says New York SEAL, okay. And the inner part, the center, I just have the year I was born in. And that's my SEAL.
Oh, the year that you were born in.
That's it. And that's what I've done for me. You go out to 1215.org and see what Bill offers or what he suggests and so on. But getting back to email, one of the problems we've had is the email has been sending out, I'll send out one email, and it may send out five of the same things,
okay?
You could see that real quick, just delete it. Recently, it went out as many 20, okay? You get 20 emails, which is just one email, but it went 20 times to everybody. They fixed that. I haven't seen that lately in the past week or two. So I believe they fixed that problem. So
you know, the other thing you can do is you could create a folder that the National Liberty Alliance, anything from National Liberty Alliance goes in, so it's not mixed in with your other email. Then you open it up, and it has only National Liberty Alliance stuff.
And remember also this. Look, we are a proactive group. We're here to save America. We're not a club where people come in and hang out, although people may do that. It's not what we're really about. We are proactive. Everybody that joins National Liberty Alliance should be active. Even if they can only give an hour a week, that's fine. Look, if every person gave an hour a week, that's 4,000 hours a week that we'd be having of people working. Boy, we get a lot of stuff done, you know. But everybody should be proactive. Everybody should be knowing what's going on. They should be interested in hearing what's going on, to be reminded of a meeting or to go to, or be told a certain piece of information that we think is important for you to know. And again, we don't get long-winded, and we stick on business. It's NLA business focused in on the juries, you know.
I appreciate your help, and yes, I'll get right at it. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Gerard, I'm going to pass it to you so you can click the button. I'm going to go get a bottle of water.
Okay.
I'll be back in a short.
Looks like Ruben from Kansas is next. Go ahead. You've been unmuted.
Hey, Gerard. How are you doing?
Good.
I've got a question. Well, it's kind of a comment. I tried to go online this past week and make a donation. And it's asking me to open up a PayPal account. I don't really want to open up a PayPal account. I want to make.
Let me address that, because I don't know if he knows about that. I wanted to hear what you had to say before I ran for a bottle of water, just in case I needed to answer it, and I do need to answer this one. Yeah, on the top one, it's the way they're set up. Okay, in order to give us something weekly, $5 a week or whatever you want to give, that's that first one. You have to open a PayPal account to give. Okay, but the second one is a one-time donation, and you can use a credit card. Now, they did that other one because they want to make the few cents on those credit cards every time they turn around, so they wanted to get the business. And I wish they didn't do it, but they did. But it is what I got. You know, that's all I could work with is PayPal online right now. So the first one will require that. The other one is just a one-time donation, and if you want to give $5 a month, what you could do is click on the $20, and you'll be paying 4 months, and then 4 months from now, click and pay another $20, and just try to remember to come out and do it. Or, you know, I've had a few people come out, and you know, and they pay $120 or $150 or $200 and said, you know, this is for my year, and so on. And that's fine. However people want to do it, you know. But anyway, the other way you could do it.
I have a monthly payment.
Yeah, unfortunately, the only thing I have right now is they require you to have an account. That stinks, but it is what it is. You know, I went to open up an account using National Liberty Alliance, and when I went through the credit card people that they used and stuff, they went out and looked at the website, and they said, oh, no, you people are too radical. We're not going to get involved. Matter of fact, I'm planning on suing them, but I just haven't got the time. But I haven't been able to set anything up through the credit card that my bank uses. So
I have to open an account with them then.
That or just come out every 4 months and give $20 if they're giving $5 a month. You know, if
unless,
you want to give more.
Unless he wants to send it, he could send a check, can't he?
Yeah, on the bottom of the page, there's a place where there's an address, National Liberty Alliance, and it gives the address. I think it's 3979, if I recall. But it got the address there, and you can mail a check or money order or whatever that way, too. But
do you have the capability of having a electronic check deposited in your account or whatever?
No, not set up for that.
You know, I was going to tell you something earlier, because it wasn't really one of my points, but I only had 3 points, three quick ones. GoFundMe would be a great way to go, because you would show who's donating and how far you are along the progress thing, and it's very user-friendly.
What is this?
GoFundMe.
GoFundMe, okay.
GoFundMe.
Isn't that the one we looked at first, John, when we were doing the crowdfunding?
I don't know. Is this for collecting, making a collection in a three-month period or something of an X amount of dollars or something like that?
You can set it for however long you want. You can set a goal, like for $20,000 for this project, and
right.
You can have the next project. And
we did do that one time. Matter of fact, we put a really good video. I thought we put together. Obviously, we have a real serious subject, but the most of the people that visited those kind of sites, they're looking for something really cool and a watch that glows in the dark or something, whatever. And because they get a gift or something, they want that. When they see Save America, they pass right by us. So, but we did do that, and I think we collected $4,000 or $5,000 from that. I forget how much. So it gave us a reward. We were seeking to get $20,000 or reach some number, and we didn't do it that way. But we do know that there's other ones that do it. That's one. We'll look into it. There's another one that someone brought up, crowd something or other, that looked kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So we're looking to do that. We're going to be looking.
GoFundMe will allow you to put, just their first name, how much they contribute. If they really want recognition or whatever, it automatically does it for them.
Give me, what's the name of the site again?
GoFund.
GoFundMe. GoFund, F-U-N-D.
Yeah. M-E.
N-E, what is that?
M-E.
M-E, me. Okay. GoFundMe.com, I guess, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll check that one out, too.
It works really good. I just have one quick comment about Fedaris from Indiana, and I don't want to take up too much of your time. Do you have anything on online about how to sue them or where to sue them? Because you've said that several times, and I'm about to get
sue
to
who?
That point. Whoever's misbehaving, courts, prosecutors, clerks, whoever.
Yeah.
You're suing the person. You're not suing the court.
Never sue. Look, don't sue yourself. You don't want to sue an agency because you're paying for that agency. The agency is okay. The agency hasn't done nothing against you,
or
the position hasn't done nothing against you, but the person.
Where do you file the suit at against that person?
Federal court. Everything's a federal case. Everything's a federal case. Whenever they violate your unalienable rights, like hijack you into a foreign court, which is what they do all the time, conspiracy to hijack you into a foreign court, conspiracy to prevent you from having your unalienable right of due process, all of that is, those things are focused in on your unalienable rights, and when anybody working for the government violates your unalienable rights, that's a federal case.
Okay, well, I just want to tell you something real quick. I went to court this past week. The judge, I was challenging jurisdiction. It was on the traffic ticket. Anyway, she refused to hear anything I wanted to say, and she real quickly said, well, I'm going to find you in contempt of court. I'm in a plea of not guilty. You set for the 8th of June, and this court's dismissed.
She found
me in contempt of court.
We're all surprised at that. That's what they do. And you know what? That judge would, from me, 4 or 5 days later, she would receive papers and she'd be removed from that bench as far as sitting on my case is concerned, because she'd have to recuse herself because I'd be suing her in federal court.
Federal court. That's where I'm going. Okay. I just just pick the thing on Facebook, on PayPal, and get an account.
And don't forget to file those judicial complaints, because I've been hearing that it's important, because they are looking at them at this point because they know they got problems. So if you file a complaint against a judge like that, you know, if that particular judge gets two or three or four of those, believe me, they act, because look at, they're politically motivated too. And so if they got somebody that's really running roughshod over the people, so much so that the people are actually filing complaints, you know, they're trying to take care of them now, because they see the writing on the wall. I mean, in New York, they completely did away with the judicial board for a while because they were so corrupt. But I understand now that they're alive and well, and you should file those.
Well, I just got my paperwork from the Supreme Court for the judicial complaints thing, so I'll be filing that soon.
There you go. Make sure you put that. It can't hurt. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. I appreciate everything you're doing, and I'll try and get back to PayPal now.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. We have unknown next caller with a 917 area code.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, this is 917-415, Leonard, New York City.
Okay, Leonard, what's up?
John, I left a couple of messages for you. There are several issues that I'd like to bring up. We met a couple of months ago at the restaurant in downtown Manhattan, and I mentioned to you that I'm a friend of Pastor Manning. So if you're interested, we can make the interview happened, and it will be a great exposure. So if you are, here's my number. You can call me back. Another one is, I also, in one of my messages, I mentioned that when there was a fundraising going on, I mentioned that there are some products that I could donate to possibly drum up some interest from people. Instead of just sending money, they can actually get a reward for that. Since there's no 501c3, then it could be done. Again, if you're interested, give me a call. Regarding a fax, I did a little sort of checking out. There are several ways of doing it. And hearing the numbers that you mentioned, it sounds like it's astronomical comparing to what I was able to find out. There are services that could be either on cloud or installed on one's machine, and they have a different levels of the number of faxes that one can send. It could be 400 or 500 a month. It could be 400 or 500, which includes in the monthly fee like 10-20 bucks, and then each additional fax is like 3 cents or so. So it sounds like, unless somebody already looked into it, there is a possibility of sending mass number of faxes for a fraction of what I heard numbers announced today.
Actually, those numbers were the low numbers. You should have heard the numbers we got. Because we were also talking about buying equipment to send it and time.
Gerard, there's no equipment.
We got a hold of a service that gave us a pretty good deal. John went crazy with this and got quote after quote after quote. And once you start talking to them, they lowball you when you go in. But then you find out that once you hit, they give you so many free ones, and then you get to a certain point, and all of a sudden you're paying 3 cents a piece. And when you're up in those thousands range, it adds up to, you know, many thousands of dollars. I mean, he must have spent 3 days on the phone nonstop talking to all these salesmen. So, I mean, unless you really got something that's nailed down that's going to be cheaper. And, I mean, we have a call out to anybody that knows, you know, where we can get a cheaper service or where we can get the equipment where, you know, we make an initial investment and then we won't be having to use the services. We would do our own. But, you know,
to do our own
is about $60,000 to
buy the equipment. I got that call, Gerard, I got that call. I did look into it, and I believe what I found could be somewhat financially better than what you have now. And
well,
we'll
call you, and you can turn it on to it, no doubt. Look, we get something that's cheaper, we'll go with it.
That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And it's not to do with me. And one more thing, I am sending money constantly. I also purchased quite a bit from Paul, from the East End Coins. I'm also buying stuff from Numana. So I'm for the one-man show, I'm contributing a lot towards the cause, which I believe to be of enormous importance. So that's my two cents.
Well, we appreciate that, and we need more people to do that, and we definitely appreciate the people that do it, because they're kind of the backbone at this point. But, you know, we like to encourage people to do more of that, and we do appreciate you, and John will give you a call. I got your number down here on a notepad, and you're Leonard. I remember, I think I was down there at one point.
I
think I met you, too. But we'll get together with you in the next couple of days here, okay?
Yeah, let's do that. You know, Pastor Manning has a very, very wide audience with a lot of people, of like-minded people, very faith-based. So let's give it a shot, and I can make it happen.
Sounds good. Thank you very much, Clint.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. Thanks.
Okay, next caller is Crystal from... Oh, man, what did I do? I'm sorry, buddy. Get back in there. The three or four of you was there. I didn't even hit that thing. I just went over and it went poof and slid. Get back in the queue. Anybody that wants to get in, I hit the button accidentally. We had Crystal coming up from somewhere. Now we have Sheila from New York. All right. Sign back in. Okay.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah, this is Crystal from Connecticut.
Yeah.
Yes, right. Go ahead, Crystal. I'm sorry.
Hi.
How's it going?
Okay. One thing, that I've been telling people, and with all the problems that we've been having and all the collection and the papers from court, every time you receive a letter, whether it's a foreclosure or whatever, I tell everybody to file the papers, the grievance. Go to the courthouse, or you can get it online, file the grievance against these attorneys and whomever, you know. A lot of them are perpetrating a fraud. I'm going through something right now, and they falsified all my documents. As a matter of fact, well, they came after the right one because I used to work in that department for 40-some-odd years.
Right.
And they just got it's just a total mess. And so I just make sure I send, you know, the questionnaires, have them to sign a notarized. And if they are perpetrating a fraud, they have to, you know, I want to see the documents and where I signed and who signed, blase, blase. And they are not signing it off on nothing. You know, now they turned around and sent me, this was the biggest bogus one. They sent me a letter, another foreclosure, said, well, we want your house, and we just bought your mortgage from your, from my union, a credit union, which they put their names on my union in November of 2014. And so I have all my documents and everything. I said, so this is how they've been ripping off people, because a lot of people don't know how to read the grantee, grantor, the volume and page, the deeds, mortgage release, and all that. And
listen, they can't even do that without your permission, and that's what
exactly.
They do.
Exactly. Well,
they robo-sign.
I won that in 2006 when they kept on changing my mortgage. And I contacted my attorney at the time, and I said, I'm the one who put the contract together. I said, I want you to answer all these questions, and we did a conference call. And I said, but I want to ask the last one. And I said, who signed my name to change my mortgage?
There you go.
You can't change anybody's mortgage. That's like me saying, I want your house, I don't put my name on it. That's illegal. And so many people, especially elderly people, they're fraudulent. You know, they're perpetrating the fraud, and people don't know and understand, and they try to put the living fear. Again, they ask them for their juris number, and also ask them for their W-9 number, because no company or corporation can come back on anything because they're already tax exempt, you know? So, and they're like, one of the people who contacted me, they wanted to get $15,000. Then they put a bank on there who never you know, who never I never dealt with. So I contacted and I sent them a letter. And now they're fighting with the attorneys and they're screaming at them. Then they put another person. It's just like, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Everybody pay attention to your contract. When you sign, who you signed with, go over your notes, because surely you got on your legal documents who's on there and who you signed with.
Right.
And now you got all this. It's just like they can't even figure it out.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that.
Yes,
appreciate
but
it.
Anybody that they, even if it's a debt collector or whatever, ask them for their W-9 form.
Right.
And they don't want to give you that.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Chris.
All right.
Well,
have a good evening.
All
right.
Yeah. Bye. Yeah.
11
Sheila from New York. Go ahead, Sheila.
Hi. Hi, everyone. I just want to, I have a question. It's, I received an email, and it says, California senators approve ban on grand jury investigations into police deaths. I forwarded a copy to you, Gerard, and I just,
I think we should indict them.
Quickly, it's a Senator Holly Mitchell. She's a Democrat, Los Angeles. A bill was introduced, 227, and it argued that the lack of transparency and oversight in grand jury deliberations, which do not involve judges, defense attorneys, or cross-examination of witnesses, did not deserve the public. Did not serve the public.
Yeah, I think we should invite indict that senator, whoever that was. That's what we should do.
Well, I did forward it to Gerard, and so I'll forward it to you as well, John. But I thought, you know, you should see this because they have lost their minds. They're saying by banning the use of grand juries, the decision to prosecute officers would rest solely with local district attorneys by Alexandra Kolsef.
Just so you know, this has been the battle for 1,000 years, and it's been the battle in England, it's been the battle here in the United States, and early on they made this battle in 1939, huge battle, even trying to change the Constitution, and matter of fact, it ended up with a stronger hold on the unalienable rights of the people to have that indictment by a grand jury here in New York. But, you know, they've been working at this for a long time. The judges and the prosecutors want to control this whole thing. They don't want the people involved at all because, after all, the people are too dumb. They're too stupid. They don't know anything about law. They can't do it. We're trained. We're educated. We went to bar schools. We know what to do. We'll take care of it. So that's the arrogance of these people. And that battle's been around here for forever. And,
yeah, one argument. This is it. I just wanted to read this. The use of criminal grand juries has fostered an atmosphere of suspicion that threatens to compromise the nature of our justice system. This is what Alexandria, Democratic.
Well, you know
senator,
what? Which is this United? Is this in the U.S. Congress you're talking about, or senator?
Yeah, it's
okay.
Well, it's California.
Well, guess what?
Senator.
Guess what? This week, they're going to get a copy of our quo warranto so they know what the law is and how far they can go and what kind of law they can make. And certainly, they don't have the authority in the quo warranto when they read that. And that's going to come from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. I don't know if we finally had I don't think we served the Senate and the Congress on the quo warranto, did we? I know we planned to. I don't remember.
I don't think
but we are going to send them out this week, the quo warranto again, and that senator will get this, and they'll get a series of other things, and I'm sure they'll change their tune pretty quick on after a couple of weeks of getting our papers.
Well, there's a link that's in the email that you can go to the direct you know, place of where this was posted.
Who's she blaming this on? The prosecutors? Because that's who's leading the grand juries around.
It looks like they're trying to put all of the power into the prosecutors.
Exactly.
And,
they
and
want to
the
get
judges.
Rid of the grand jury.
The prosecutor is the one that's.
Yeah, but they want to get the grand jury. They don't want to have to go to the grand jury at all. They just don't want to be bothered talking to the grand jury.
Well, they don't want to talk to the people.
Right. They don't want to be bothered.
They want to make the prosecutor a king. He's already a freaking king.
Yeah, of course. Look, they control everything. They control whether we're going to go to jail or not because they're so important and they're so knowledgeable and they're so educated in statutory law that, hey.
Well, that senator just committed treason
against
the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. That's what they're doing. To me, they're protecting their criminal ring. That's what they're trying to do because they know that this grand jury is getting known and people are going to start swaying towards that. And it's just a way of blocking and discrediting and the whole thing, you know. So also real quick, John, I want to say that could you check Meetup because I have only put in one date, and that's for Sunday for CPS. And apparently, other dates are going out. I don't know how.
Right. I'll go take a look at. Give me a call if you want me to repair that kind of thing, because I'm not sure exactly where the problem is. Because I think you complained about it before, but I'm not sure where the problem is. But I can fix it. The other thing, I'm thinking of giving up Meetup because, you know, I don't know that it really is helpful. I think maybe just having the website and the. Is it helpful to you having the Meetup? I mean,
now Gina's also using it.
Because I also don't want people to become confused, okay? Because you know we've had people who joined us. Well,
we don't really
we've had people.
It.
Yeah, we've had people who joined us onto the Meetup, and after many many months, then discovered we actually have a website, National Liberty Alliance. So they were on the Meetup, but they never came to the website. And then they find out about us. So, and the Meetup, you know, it was good for when we didn't have email, and that's why we were using Meetup. But we've got email abilities now, and we'll have to. I'm going to talk with others, see once what they think whether we should drop Meetup because you know that cost us. What do they charge me? I think it's $45 every 3 months. It's not expensive, but you know, to save $45 if I could, I should. You know,
right. Well, I just want to get the date. As far as CPS out is Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
All right, call me tomorrow, and I got a late afternoon appointment, but I should be here all morning and early afternoon. So, give me a call when you get me. We'll go right out and just fix the problem. So,
okay.
But anyway, we got 4 minutes left and two more callers left. So, Gerard, if you hit the next button twice, you'll end up.
Yes, I'm there. I got you. Yep. Okay. Hang on, let me do it again. Okay, unknown.
All right, this is Rod. Yeah, this is Roger Sint. I'm in Minnesota.
Okay.
I've got a couple of questions. One of them is, it's interesting that you're doing rid of habeas corpus because we're going to be doing one of those. But you said you were on part two. Is part one online? Is it under the media group that we can see what you covered last week?
Yeah, if you go to nationallibertyalliance.org, okay?
Yep.
And then click on weekly call, okay?
Weekly
when you go to
call.
Weekly call, top left side, okay? When you get that, scroll down and you'll see archives of our past Monday night calls. And you come down to the bottom. And tonight, the one we're doing tonight will be up in about 10 minutes after
we
show.
Yeah, but he wants to read.
I'm going to give them both. You can go and click on 150504, habeas corpus. And then you'll see tonight, you'll see part two, the tonight's program.
Okay.
You'll see that up here too. So that's where the audio is. Now, as far as finding the actual papers, go to media. Click on the media on the blue bar. It's the second tab to the right. Come down, and you'll see habeas corpus right there. You'll see court filings, habeas corpus, and legal documents. Now, if you're going to be filing, I don't know what experience you have, but if you want a good experience and an understanding of writing papers and stuff, of course you've got to curtail it around you as an individual and not as a grand jury, but it's all the same anyway. Read all this stuff. We have all these legal documents that will give you a lot of, you can cut and paste all kinds of stuff, and the footnotes come right along with it. So when if you open it up in Word, cut and paste a couple of paragraphs or something that you want to use, and it's got footnotes, and you bring it into Word, you'll carry the footnotes right over with you.
Well, let me just quick mention the case. It's a friend of ours. Way back in the year 2000, he discovered there's no law that says he has to file a 1044 and pay income tax, federal income tax.
You'll never win that argument with these people. He's going to end up in jail. He's got two things to do. He can comply and wait till we get to the other side to deal with it, or he could do a habeas corpus. But if he does a habeas corpus, he better understand and do it correctly, because you know they don't want to let their teeth out of you. This is an IRS thing.
That's right.
So they don't want their teeth out of you. Now, if you know that's something, you know, why don't you give me a call during a week or something? I'd like to talk to you about it. You know, I'd like to learn a little bit about it.
All right. Who am I talking with?
My name's John. John Durash.
John.
Call me at 845-233-6560.
Okay.
Me tomorrow early afternoon, and I'll give you some thoughts on that. Because I'm interested to see how that case would come about as time goes, because I think the habeas corpus is the thing to do to deal with the IRS.
Yeah. And the thing that actually really shocked me in this whole thing was when that writ of, there was an affidavit submitted saying, show me the law. The judge came back and said, that's just a frivolous request.
Yeah. Well, we got to knock him out of the ballpark. And let me tell you, I will tell you that I'm interested in talking to you because maybe I can help.
All right.
Because think this is something we need to look into a little more.
Okay. I may have a couple of other people with me or talk to you also on that.
Okay.
But thank you very much, John.
I'm hard to get sometimes. Sometimes I don't answer my phones. But tomorrow I should be. If you don't get me, try me a couple hours later. Anyway.
All right.
We're out of time, but you can take 1 minute with Ronald if you want, Gerard.
Okay. Ronald from Oregon, real quick.
Hello. Thank you for letting me on tonight. Hey, I'm curious, how many folks are on this call tonight from across the country?
Well, we usually get between 300 and 400 people. We won't know until tonight. We'll get a report on it, and we'll know how many came on. But it's over 300, usually just under 400. On a good time, we'll go a little over 400. Some people come on in the first hour and then they leave, and then other people come in late. So, you know, but the whole count is...
That's something that you think would be worthwhile to put on your website there and maybe give an idea how many different states these calls are coming from?
Well, anybody involved with National Liberty Alliance knows that we're national. We have membership in every state. We have leaders in every state. We're active in every state. We have mailing addresses in every state. We have a seal in every state. So we are national. We get tens of thousands of people that visit our site every month. We've got over 4,000 members, and that's the activity. Now, we have a lot of people. We used to have it when we were doing a different program, we would get a little report and also how many MP3s were downloaded. So we'd get the count not only of how many people came to the call, but how many people downloaded. And we actually had twice the number of people downloading than listening to the call. So if we get 300 or 400 people that come on the line on Mondays, we hope that maybe there's 600 people that are downloading it. Now, some of those people might be people who were listening in and didn't get to hear the whole thing, or they wanted
maybe
to hear it again.
They might
say
on the website, well, we had 300 callers last night.
Right.
Next week, or maybe we'll have 500 callers.
Right. Well, I don't like to get too much into numbers. I'm comfortable enough to know that we're out there. We have name recognition. We have thousands of people that visit us. Like I said, we have a membership and we have people, but I don't like to get too much into the numbers. And the main reason why is I think we want to focus more on principles and that focus, because if we start thinking numbers, next thing you know, we're trying to focus in on building numbers and not building quality and principles. But also, just from my biblical background, God made a big thing about counting, so I don't pay too much attention. But I do pay a little because it's there, you know?
Yeah.
So the real power, from my opinion, is that we're going to win if God wants us to win. And it doesn't matter whether we have three people or 300, you know?
Well, hey, recently for all those on the call that partake in the medicinal aspect of cannabis and some of the deprohibition and legalization that's going on around the planet, there was a recent Arizona Supreme Court case that said anybody that was so-called licensed up with permission from the state of the issuance of wherever they got their permit for medicinal use while on parole or probation, they couldn't be messed with.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, under common law, you do what you please, okay? You know, you can't corrupt the morals of the minor.
I understand that, but there are a lot of folks that are all locked up into the regulatory, statutory, coded world, and they need to know that they too have the right to exercise that right, as you just described, and the Arizona Supreme Court has handed down that such ruling. So I just wanted to put that out there. And good job.
I appreciate
it. Busy. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, that brings us to the end, Gerard. So we appreciate everyone calling, and Lord willing, we'll see you next. Oh, let me just make a quick announcement. I should get something out. I meant to be making an announcement on Saturday night's meeting. We get together for a Bible study at 7 p.m., and I haven't been able to really stay on top of that the last couple of weeks, and I meant to get to it this Sunday to make an announcement that we're going to postpone it for a while until I can – you know, I'm just so busy. It's just so hard for me to do it right now. And I don't like to come on and teach things that I haven't really had the time to do my homework during the week on. So we're going to put that off for a while. Maybe in a couple of weeks we'll come back on with it again, and we'll see where we go. But that's anybody interested when we come back on with that. It's Saturday nights at 7 p.m. right here in this room. But with that, Lord willing, we'll see you all on Monday. And thanks, everyone, for coming. And again, let's support NLA. Let's get involved. Let's volunteer, join a committee, and let's do what we got to do. Good night, everybody. Give a little